session discussed a variety of items. First item, property transactions. The property discussed were the lease sites at 571 Embarcadero and 725 Embarcadero. The council also discussed anticipated litigation. The agenda incorrectly cited the code section as 54956.9B when it should have been D2. That change in the code was made January 1st, 2013, but the text of that code change has not changed, and it was the anticipated litigation. The litigation item was First American Title and First Bank and the City of Morro Bay. Those are the parties to that anticipated litigation. The anticipated litigation concerns the development at 600 Morro Bay Boulevard. The bank from that property is foreclosed on the property, is threatening litigation if the city doesn't release the affordable housing deed restriction. Council also discussed in closed session labor negotiations. This is where the council directs our city's labor negotiator regarding the terms and conditions of the contracts between the various unions that the city has with its employees. As to the labor negotiations, the lease property transactions, and the anticipated litigation, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Thank you for that. And that brings us to council reports and announcements. And I'll look to my left. Mr. League, any announcements? Christine?
Yes, thank you, Mayor, and welcome, everyone. Good to see everybody again. Missed you all last week or so. Another thank you. If you notice around the San Jacinto area, and especially at this point going toward Del Mar, we met over the summer, and thanks to the group of people who decided to give up some of their summertime to meet with us and to talk about how to increase traffic and improve traffic for all users of that San Jacinto corridor. Our first step was to focus on the Del Mar Elementary area where we do have rush hour twice a day, 9 months a year. So thanks to Chief Amy Christie from our Morro Bay Police Department, from the Public Services staff, we had Rob Livick and Rick Sarwine, from San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, staff member and Morro Bay resident Gaishka Baker, Del Mar Principal Janet Gould, and Del Mar PTA member Amy Burton. So thanks for everyone, and thanks to the street maintenance staff under Joe Woods for refreshing paint and getting things ready for the August 22nd first day of school. That's all. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Nancy?
Just a couple things here. If you have not had a chance to get by the Morro Bay Art Center and see the current exhibit that will be up for about another 6 weeks, it's a fabulous juried show. The top prize was $1,000 for the first place painting. It's a great variety of artwork available there, so check out our Morro Bay Art Center on Main Street. Also, tomorrow night, the Central Coast Vet Support Group will meet at the Eagles at 6 o'clock, and they're anxious to have more members. They're just getting started on planning what I believe is will be the first annual Morro Bay Veterans Day celebration on the Sunday before Veterans Day. So that should be exciting to have that happening here. Also, Dahlia Days are coming. You didn't think you'd get away without this one. It's September 6th and 7th at the Morro Bay Community Center. Friday from 5 to 8, there will be a beautiful standard flowers show, a plant sale, entertainment. At 5:30, we will have the Los Osos Folk Dancers. At 6:30, we will have Dr. Joe Sable, our local dahlia expert, who will tell you everything you wanted to know about dahlias and probably a lot more. So that will go on till 8 o'clock Friday night. Then Saturday from 10 to 4, we will have exhibits and displays. And our keynote speaker on Saturday will be Kevin Larkin, who's the president of the National Dahlia Society. We have a special surprise for you at noon, so plan to be there. Thank you.
Noah? Thank you. I just want to start by remembering Mr. Jeff Hensley, who some of you may know. He was the former owner of Morro Bay Cyclery and one of the founders of perhaps the coolest haunted house I've ever seen. He passed recently, leaving his wife and two children, and we really lost a skilled mechanic and creative, kind person, and it's always sad when that happens. Jeff's memory, though, will continue on. They are planning on his birthday, August 31st, beach cruise ride up in Cayucas, which will benefit, I believe, the Lions Club and some other organizations that Jeff's involved with. And the details of that are still being worked out, but that will be upcoming at the end of this month, August 31st, in Cayucas for the beach cruise. I believe they're going to have a 2-mile and a 5-mile ride, which should be a lot of fun and definitely in the spirit of a great man. On another note, we have here in Morro Bay a planting going on through the National Estuary Program, which I'm the representative to, of eelgrass. It's a eelgrass recovery project, and it's a volunteer planting event and will be going on from Monday, August 19th, all the way through August 24th, Saturday, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Coleman Beach. And they're 1 to 2 hour shifts, whatever you're available to do. You will have the opportunity to get your hands as wet and sandy as you'd like. And there are other things that if you prefer not to go that far, you can definitely participate in that way. And if you'd like more information about volunteering and getting involved with this eelgrass planting event, you can call the Estuary Program at 772-3834 or go to the website morrobaynep.org. A couple other quick ones. We have a really interesting program that the Economic Vitality Corporation and the Community Environmental Council have put together. It's countywide, called Solarize Slow, which is helping to incentivize and provide special pricing for homeowners that would like to install solar panels on their homes. And the project's a 3-month project and will go from August 1st, so it's already started, through November 1st, and includes a couple of public workshops so you can learn more about what solar could do for you, this program, and how to leverage the program to benefit your energy needs and bring your hoop shoes if you play. And the other one that we'll probably talk a little bit more about later on tonight on C4 is we're hosting the community's first new water reclamation wastewater treatment plant workshop that will be designed to get input and listen to your needs, the things that you think we need to prioritize with this project, and basically launch this phase to develop the ideas of what we want to analyze and then present those and then make a decision by the end of the year so we can move forward. So it's very important, if you do have ideas that you think we should follow and pursue and evaluate, this is the time. So if you would be available, that's Thursday, August 15th, that's this Thursday, from 6 to 9 at the Vets Hall. And we will also have additional workshops, public hearings, and presentations as we go forward. If you'd like some more information, you can call our project manager, Mr. Rickenbach, at 610-1109 or go to the city's website on that. Hope to see you there.
Okay, wow. Well, meeting adjourned.
Thank you. I had a lot built up over that time, man.
Okay. Well, thanks. A couple announcements. For those of you that were following Jack Smith, he completed that trek across the United States. So, you know, we should give a shout out to him. And, you know, when you get a chance, go down to the shop and say hello. I haven't done that yet. I don't even know if he's back yet, actually. But I did see his blog and everything where he completed that. So congratulations to him. That was pretty cool. Secondly, National Night Out. That was a great success. Chief Christie, staff, Chief Knuckles, your team, all you guys, great job. That was a well attended, so thanks for that. If you didn't attend it, I think that's going to be an annual event where we'll see some more of that. So great event. Project Surf Camp, this is my first year, so it says the motto is changing lives, and I got to say that it was very effective. Annie Kay, Nancy's granddaughter, was there, so that was cool. Our city staff, thank you for being there as well. Chief Christie, Ms. Luker, Mr. Woods, and I know there was other days where other staff members, Mr. Livick, and everybody was there, so that was very good, cool event, thanks. And then, of course, was announced we had the water reclamation workshop on August 15th. And then the one that we need to talk about also is a garage sale that's coming up on August 7th. And I know it's not on the slide, but August 7th we have a garage sale, and this is going to help raise funds for the Morro Bay Bike Park. So it'll be at 335 Quintana Road, Morro Bay, the Good Flea, on August 17th at 8 o'clock. We're also accepting gently used items for donations for this, and all the funds will proceeds will go towards building the new bike park. So any information on that, you can go to IPOLANI75@yahoo.com and get some information on that, and then check the Facebook page as well. So thanks. I think that concludes our announcements, and thanks. And let's move on to the business spot, and we have Mr. Schultz from the bike shop to give us an introduction to his new bike shop. Thanks for coming out. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
Please state your name for everybody and do the formality for us. Thanks.
All right. My name is David Schultz, and I own the bike shop. Been open about 2 months. I'm located at 842 Main Street, right across from the Coalesce Bookstore and the Arts Center and Top Dog Coffee. My phone number is 772-2697. The website is thebikeshopmb.com. And so far, so good. I just aim to provide all not only complete bikes, but the products and services, so everyone doesn't have to drive to Slo anymore to get the inner tube they need. I have tune-ups starting at $20, so bring your bike in and we'll get it all set up. I've got all the parts you need and repairs. That's it.
All right, great, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's a great shop. Thanks for coming today. All right, and with that, we'll go on to public presentations. And first off, we have the quarterly report for our economic development program. And Mr. Schmidt and Mr. D'Annunzio.
Good evening. Craig Schmidt, CEO of Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. And I'm here with John D'Annunzio, our economic development manager, and Sonia Flores. And Noah used up all my time, so this concludes my report. Any questions? We've been really busy the last 3 months. We're currently working with 15 different businesses that are interested in locating in Morro Bay. And a couple of those are industrial sites. We've developed a website, Do Business in Morro Bay. It's .com, so please visit that. One of the interesting components of that is that we can track people coming in and when our contacts were, we can track our prospective businesses and keep them on a schedule. There's also a Facebook page that's been well visited with regards to doing business in Morro Bay. Part of that program is property, commercial property search. And John has worked very hard on developing the property inventory that we really haven't had in the past. So it makes it valuable when people are coming in looking for property to locate Morro Bay that we can go right to that site. We held an event planners workshop. I believe that was in May, and it was well attended. It was directed toward event coordinators and talking about the issues that they have. The result of that workshop is that we're putting together a packet that Mr. Woods is going to be handing out as part of an event application form that includes a media list, includes a piece written by Karen Moss, Anatomy of an Event, which is a very good piece for anybody that's doing an event, and also some volunteer resource list and equipment resource list. We also partnered with the One Stop in Slo County and put on two job seeker academies to assist people that are out of work and want to brush up on their skills and their resume and such. We had 40-some people the first one and 25 the second one. We also did a rerun of a 1996 retail survey, and this was kind of interesting in what we found. The one that jumps out the most is the difference between 1996 and 2013 with the percentage of people that are shopping in Morro Bay. It went from 36% down to 27%. And a lot of that probably has to do with internet shopping. A lot more people are shopping on the internet. But also there's some other retail outlets that have been developed during that time, especially around the Atascadero area. So what we want to do is to, in cooperation with the Tourism Bureau, do a Shop Local, Shop Morro Bay campaign and really educate the citizenry of Morro Bay the importance of spending that dollar here in Morro Bay. It bounces around several times before it leaves the community and provides great public services and salaries to our esteemed staff and all the good services that are provided by the city of Morro Bay. Upcoming programs, we're putting together a draft economic development action plan. Our two representatives on City Council, Christine and Nancy, the Johnson girls, and the EBC will help us evaluate that and develop that, and we will have that as part of our next report. We are also reconvening our business leader committee, and we'll have representatives from retail, restaurants, lodging, recreation, ag, real estate, banking, the arts, fishing, and city representatives. So we'll have a broad spectrum of business folks working with us as part of this advisory committee meeting. And then October, we're looking to announce our Shop Local, Shop Morro Bay campaign. We're also in discussion with the EBC about doing a possible partnership. I understand they received extra funding from the city, and so they're coming to us and asking us to partner with them to do an effective economic development program. One program that's on the horizon is the Business Retention Survey, where we will quantify the business climate of Morro Bay on such issues as workforce, transportation, housing, city services, and et cetera. And then we'll be able to develop strategies addressing those. And now this concludes my report. So I know you got a pretty extensive report there from John. So do you have any questions of myself or
yes.
John?
All right, thank you. Any questions to the left? Go ahead. George, did you have any? No?
Okay, hi. Thank you very much to both you and Mr. D'Annunzio for the report. And I just have a quick question for starts the report you gave to us. This is page 7, so I don't know if you have that there.
Memorized.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope.
Well, you mentioned 15 new businesses that you're working with potentially.
That's correct.
Correct. Okay. So they are the ones that are listed, I believe, under potential new businesses for us.
Right. And I would prefer that we not mention them by name because we are in negotiation with some of them.
Okay. So of the 15, I was wondering which ones are open already without giving away too much. And this would be beginning. The work that was done with these businesses would have started what month of, so how long real numbers through your report that was that I was curious to follow up on, and perhaps one of them, all right, the free consultation program that's mentioned, this is on your report, page 12, a number of business owners and entrepreneurs are taking advantage of the free consultation program, and that's offered through the Economic Development Program, correct?
That is correct, and in partnership with the EBC.
Okay. So you did mention some numbers on how many businesses are participating in that. Would you be able to pin down that particular program, how many folks have come through to take advantage of that?
Well, 33 businesses.
That's the 33. Okay. Just on the report, it wasn't listed as, well, at least on that page where that information was. So that's 33 businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And are you finding that they meet, the deal is they meet one time? Is that their free consultation?
Or
does it depend?
We've had multiple visits. It depends on the situation and the extent of help that they need.
Okay. And then another one further follow-up, if you permit me. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Thank you. This is would be on the report that we have is page 15 under 3.0, encourage new business. So you're talking about the incubator businesses. Now, I don't know if those are disclosable or not in terms of the business names.
Actually, they are. We're very proud of those. One is the Central California Seafood Marketing Association, and the other one is fishline.com. It's an app program for the fishing industry. We've assisted them kind of outside of the incubator. They are an incubator business, but they're not taking up space inside the chamber at the moment.
Okay. So we've got one that's ready to go, the Central California Seafood Marketing Association. It's reported here that they'll begin in September.
They've actually already
They're already rolling.
Yeah.
Okay. So at some point, do the incubator businesses circulate out of the physical space at the chamber?
That's the intention. We give them a 12-month contract and then review where they are. The limit is 36 months.
Okay.
So what we're trying to do is graduate them and have them go fill a vacant storefront in Morro Bay and hire people.
Right. And then with Fishline, they're not actually in the physical space.
That's no, but we're still assisting and meeting with them at the conference center.
Right. So you could, there is space for maybe another one that would need a physical space. You could tuck
another
one in there. Okay. And then you mentioned that we're all open to ideas that we've heard from folks in the community who might have a business that could be incubated or started or supported. If you could talk a little bit about if someone out there has an idea, how would they go about approaching the economic development?
Well, we would encourage them to call John or myself. What we ask is for an executive review of their business plan, and based on that, we make the decision.
Okay.
So there are criteria with regards to them locating a business in Morro Bay, how many jobs that might create, what sort of revenue might be generated.
Okay, and then how, let's just say none of us have any good ideas, so we don't give you any leads. How then do you think you, what are strategies for recruiting another incubator business? You know, because it'd be great if, I mean, sometimes you get a terrific lead, but if you don't, just wondering
right.
how.
Right. Well, we would use every avenue. We'd go out to the membership asking if they know of anyone. We would go to Bay News and let them know that we're looking for someone. We would go to City Council, let people know that we're looking for someone.
Okay. Okay, great. So you would encourage any of us in the community who have ideas or know of folks who may
right.
be thinking of an idea to bring
forward?
I don't
have a vacancy right now, and that's why I don't want to you know, sort of commit that space.
Okay. And then lastly, you mentioned your analysis of the, we talked about, in your report, you mentioned business licenses.
Mm-hmm.
So then you broke it down where the business license, I guess what I'm curious about, and I'm sure that maybe members of the public are as well, if someone has a business license that's based in Morro Bay or based outside of Morro Bay, could you give us some examples so people understand what would be a business based outside of Morro Bay that has a business license for doing business here?
Construction companies, landscaping companies.
Okay.
If they do business in Morro Bay, they're required to get a city business license.
Okay, so then the folks who are based in Morro Bay, they might also have business licenses in San Luis Obispo or in the county or
possibly
something else.
Possibly if they're traveling and doing business in those areas.
Okay, so it might be a chance for our folks, maybe that our folks are also doing business in other locations.
Right.
It just doesn't pop up here
right.
on those numbers.
And we are contacting all of those. We have lists. The city has been great in providing us information on business licenses. So we are contacting all those folks and letting them know about our program.
Okay. All right. That was, thank you very much. That's mm-hmm. what I have for right now. I appreciate
great.
It.
Thanks. Thanks for the questions.
Thank you. Nancy?
I want to thank Mr. DeNunzio for taking his time on Monday morning to go over this report with me in great detail. I really appreciated the time that you put into our discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Noah?
Yeah, thank you. My only question is more of to give you a chance to again go over
in Morro Bay to be extended to other communities out in San Luis Obispo County.
Okay. And then one other question on page 19, there was establishing a business coaching team, and it sounds like you went over that a little bit, but just as an example, Mr. Schultz that was here for the bike shop, so for, you know, a new business such as him, he'd be, that service would be available, as you were saying, you know, IT, those types of things, if he were so inclined.
Right. We're tapping into our local business community experts first and then using our partners as a second level.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks for the report. Any other questions? Seeing none, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot for your participation and support. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
And with that, we'll move on to our next public presentation, and that would be from the Morro Bay 4th Committee.
Mr. Mayor, Council, staff, thanks for inviting me tonight to give you a little bit of feedback on the 4th of July event this past year. First, I wanted to take a quick moment to thank some of the folks that helped make the event happen. It takes a lot of effort. The Tourism Bureau, TBID, whatever the new name is, they made a huge financial contribution, and we can't thank them enough for what they did to help make it to make it happen. And also the city accommodations that you guys offered was tremendous, and we really appreciate it. We have a small thank you token of our appreciation, just a framed poster with all of our gratitude scribbled everywhere. You guys can fight over whose office it goes in.
I think we can find a place at City Hall for it. Thank you.
I also want to thank Stack's Wine Bar and Tognazzini's Dockside 2 for several years in a row. Those two businesses have put on some fantastic fundraisers for us and donated 100% of the proceeds to the 4th of July event. So we definitely want to thank them and look forward to doing it again next year. And then I also want to thank a couple of businesses in particular, Morro Dunes RV Park, Embarcadero Inn, and Morro Bay Mobile, for their financial contributions. There are numerous other businesses that either donated money or services or goods, and we just couldn't have done this event without them. So we thank all of them for their support. And then finally, the residents of Morro Bay. They keep us going. They show how much they appreciate the event by putting whatever they can into the water bill or through our PayPal online. Just every small donation adds up, and it helps us put on the 4th of July event every year. So thank you to everyone. What all of those contributions do is it enables us to secure a lot of advertising for our fundraiser events, for our 4th of July, and for our city in general. It draws in not only our own residents, it draws them out to the park, but it brings people from outside of our community into Morro Bay to see what Morro Bay is all about and see why they should come back often. To give you an example of what we were able to get this year, through our partnership with Eldorado Broadcasters, they operate four radio stations in the county, including KVC. They gave us nearly 1,000 radio ads at a value of nearly $30,000. Those ads ran for about 3 months, promoting fundraisers and the event itself. We also got participation from the Bakersfield Clear Channel Radio. We got a promotional package from them valued at about $26,000. We also got some participation from KSBY. They ran a spot on the news and at other times. I think it ran about 60 times, and that was about a $5,000 advertising package. We also did a lot of work online through Facebook, promoting all of the events. We also had a shared partnership with the City of Morro Bay Facebook page. We had social media through Twitter, Instagram, Google+, and then we have our own website, which we're not great at tracking the traffic or how much that does, but it all adds up and does a lot. What we noticed this year, we don't have a headcount. It's hard to get a count of attendees, but it seemed to be one of our best attended 4th of Julys in recent memory. The crowd came early and they stayed all day. It was a great crowd. As far as I know, there weren't any incidents that we don't want to happen. It just seemed like a lot of people having fun and enjoying the holiday.
Mr. Podesta, I almost tripped during the three-legged race.
Oh, my gosh. I did speak with an hour, one day a week, whatever you can spare, we can use your help. There's seven of us right now, and we meet year-round. It takes all of us all year long to put this event on, and we need more. We also need more from the Morro Bay business community. We get a lot already, but we can continue to make the event bigger and better. We've got a lot of ideas, but we need the support to be able to do it. So if you're a business out there and you have the means, we can use your help, whether it's goods or services you can donate or money, whatever you can do, we can use it. You can organize a fundraiser. We'll help you. We just need your help in putting it on. So that's all I have.
All right. And for the record, I didn't get your name at the part, but it is
sorry.
Dan Podesto. So I didn't want to interrupt you while you were going into.
Sorry, I was on a roll.
Yeah.
Dan Podesto, president of Morro Bay Forth.
Thanks very much. And are there any questions?
I don't have a question, but I just do want to appreciate the work that you are all doing, particularly as 100% volunteers. It's really amazing what we've seen this event start as and grow to. And it was a very family-oriented event that felt safe, and there was, like you said, activity all day long, and that was really fun. Thank you.
Just one quick question. Do you have any numbers yet as to the cost of putting on the event?
I have some numbers from the past 4 years, yeah.
Thanks, Nancy.
Let's see here. The expense, we've kind of toyed with some different ideas as the years have gone on, and this year we kind of went back to basics. So the event that we put on this year was very much in line with the event we put on in 2010. It cost about $35,000. That's about as bare bones as we can get on the cost. Fireworks are more than half of the total budget. Fireworks run us about $20,000. There's various insurances, and there's the music is another big cost. That to get three bands, stage, sound, lighting, that is a good chunk, about 15% of our budget. And then it's just a bunch of little things that add up. So about $35,000 is as skinny as we can get this event from a cost standpoint. In past years, we've bumped the budget up to around 42, and then last year was our highest at about 47, and we didn't necessarily see the added expense produce the results we were hoping for, so that's why we took the approach we did this year.
Great. George?
Thanks to your committee of volunteers and all the other volunteers who come out for that day, especially the cleanup volunteers. That was never something I was really good at sticking around for. But I would like to find out, if I was interested as a community member, how would I get involved and who would I reach out to say, yes, I want to volunteer?
You can reach out to any of the seven members of the group. If you don't know who they are, you can visit our website. It's morrobayforth.org, and it's four, the number four, T-H, morrobayforth.org. Has information about our organization, what we're trying to do, who's involved. Pretty much anything you'd want to know, phone number, email, is all on the website, morrobayforth.org.
Great. Can we get a look at the framed poster that you have?
Sure.
Great. So, that looks great.
Yeah.
Thank you for that, and thank you for your work. And yeah, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Dan. Okay, with that, that concludes our public presentations, and we'll move on to the rest of our meeting, starting out with a public comment. And I do have one small request. If you have any slides or presentations, if you know ahead of time, you could let our HEP folks know. That'll get them out there sooner so they're aware of that. And with that, I'll open up public comment. You have 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record, and welcome.
Hi. Gary Johnson, resident of Morro Bay, and I got my granddaughter with me, which is Annie Kay Rachi. This has been, the last several months in Morro Bay, some great beach activities for our youth, all put on by the Park and Recreation and the Harbor Department helped too. I have lived near the ocean most of my life, and I have learned to respect what's out there in the deep blue. And one way I learned was taking ocean classes and becoming certified scuba diver. It can be lots of fun in the ocean, but it also can be a lot of tragedy if you do not respect what the ocean has to offer. There's one way to learn about the do's and don'ts of the ocean is join a class, just like our junior lifeguard program offered by the Morro Bay Park and Rec. My 13-year-old whine or cry, they have to run from one lifeguard station to the other. So they learn quickly not to complain. They run from one station to the other and back, like in number two. That goes on every day. After 3 weeks, on the slide number four, I believe, well, that's the lifeguard station, one of them. Then the kids let's see, what's number three? Okay, now they're getting ready for their for the 500 meter, and line number three, 3A, will be, they have to go from Coleman all the way to the Rock and back. And that's quite a swim. And then number five, they have a barbecue for the parents and for the kids. And then number five shows a presentation. They gave out awards. And the ones in the back in the black, those are the instructors. And you can see their ages, around 16 on up. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, I got it. Hi, I'm Annie Kay. I'm 10 years old, and this week I'm doing the Morro Bay Beach Club, and some of the instructors in the back of that picture are helping this week, like the one when you saw with the blonde hair and the brown highlights. That's Kyle. He's one of the main instructors that's helping us surf. We can always use some more volunteers. And then last Friday I helped at Project Beach Camp, which was helping needy kids surf. And that was a lot of fun, too. Thanks.
Thank you, Annie.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. My name is John Solo, and I'm also a resident of Morro Bay and also the president of the Harbor Festival this year. And I concur with Dan. We're all volunteers, and Dan, you guys did a great job. Hotels were full. I can tell you the restaurants were full. You're going to get nothing but positive reports from everybody else. This year, the Harbor Festival is on its way to recovery from a painful process of catching up on bills and paying debt, including the city bill from prior years. The festival's 32nd year will be on October 5th and 6th with a new look, a new lineup of entertainment, including the popular Queen Nation, which will be now on Sunday afternoon instead of Saturday. The event will continue to highlight our working fishing port, local wines, craft beer, with sales that account to 30% of event revenue, equaling $95,000 for that weekend. Just beer, wine, sodas, and food. After expenses, all the proceeds from the sales will go to local nonprofit organizations, which last year we gave in excess of $25,000. I'm sorry, but I'm also here to talk to you about C3 on your agenda. We are the biggest event in Morro Bay for the year, biggest economic impact and revenue for all the merchants, including hotel, motel, restaurants, and inns. Until 2004, the city was full partner and was a featured sponsor of the Harbor Festival because at that time there was an understanding that not passing any fees to events that brought people and a positive economic impact to the city, that was a win to the city, to the residents, and to the merchants. I don't know what happened, but some smart accountant out there came up with the idea, maybe not in Morro Bay, to pass on along fees to nonprofits and removing city from partnership and sponsorship of opportunities. This discourages all events, small community events, large-scale grand events, from locating themselves in Morro Bay, therefore decreasing our ability to receive economic impact that we get from these events. Now, the year ending June 2013, TOT final numbers are not maybe finalized yet, but will be over budget of $1.9 million by about $200,000 to about $2.1 to $2.2 million. Please become more of a partner with these events, help fuel our economy, invest in events in a positive impact, and reducing or removing event fees. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
I'm Don Doubledee. I'm a 44-year resident of Morro Bay. I'm retired now, so all I do is events and sell a little bit of artwork. I'm following up on John's comments. I want you to support partnering with the events. It should be a pretty good time, and we want you all to come down and share that. And please co-sponsor with us. Join us in our efforts to do good things for Morro Bay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Mayor Irons and council members, I'm Don Henderson. I'm a resident on Fresno Avenue in Morro Bay. On July 9th, I presented digital images to you all of overgrown vegetation at the intersection of Fresno Avenue and Marina Street and expressed my concern about the hazardous condition there that has contributed to a major collision on June 28th. And a brief discussion followed my presentation, and Mr. Livick said he would like more neighborhood response to the condition of that intersection, and he also indicated there's a question of where to place a traffic sign in, with situations like this. Tonight I would like to present you with a petition with 45 neighbor signatures that I and my neighbor, Mr. Klingsman, have collected to address the vegetation growth and the need for a traffic sign at that intersection. In addition to the petition, there is a sketch with a suggestion from a Mr. Gerard Rawson, another neighbor who is incidentally a San Francisco firefighter, and I've included his sketch as well. It is Mr. Rawson's opinion that a yield sign should be installed on Fresno Avenue at the Marina Street intersection, and I agree with that opinion. Also, I want you to know that considerable tree limb and shrubbery pruning has been done at 846 Marina and 872 Marina since I last spoke to you. This really helps, but nevertheless, there are parked cars on both aprons at 846 Marina, especially in the early morning, that continue to contribute to a blindness at that intersection and are a public safety hazard. I will show you some digital images to illustrate my point. This is looking north on Fresno, and this is before the shrubbery was cut. This periodically grows to this kind of height, and this homeowner, in my opinion, needs to be informed to cut this
Don,
back.
Can you speak closer north to the mic so everybody can hear, please?
Okay, this is looking north on Fresno, and this is the shrubbery at 872 Marina. Okay, this is the same view looking back a little further, looking north on Fresno, and notice how this obstructs the intersection view. This has since been trimmed back. Let's go to the next one. Now, it was trimmed this past weekend, and there's much greater visibility, although this shrubbery along in here will eventually grow. Notice we still have a parked car on the apron here at 846, which interferes with the visibility here. This is a view further back as you would approach as a driver going north on Fresno, and again, it's very difficult to see around parked cars. Now here we are on the looking south on Fresno, and where we want a yield sign is here and over here. Notice the shrubbery's been cut back here at 846 significantly. There was tree limbs here in the way and a part of this hedge, and that's a big improvement. We appreciate that.
I'm going to have to ask you to conclude, Don.
Okay, can I have two more? Can I just finish up with two more?
Just real quickly.
Okay, well, this is the car impact I'm showing you on the apron here, looking west, and it's very difficult. You have to inch out, and the last slide here, the last image, please, shows you how difficult it is to see around this. So what we're asking for is yield signs, and I'd also like to know, I think the other 44 people and myself deserve to know what's going to be done and a time frame for when it's going to be done. Thank you.
Thanks for that. Any more for public comment?
Yes, me. Good evening. My name is Liz Clinsman. I was in an accident on that corner about 6 weeks ago. Can't see a thing, couldn't see a thing, but I am pleased to see that they've cut all the bushes. Hopefully that will stay. And I would advise that, or ask you, please, to put in at least a yield sign, if not a stop sign. My son had an accident there about 5 years ago. His car was a write-off. The car I was in was a write-off. It's just too dangerous, and people drive round Morro Bay like crazy. So please consider that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Irons and fellow council members. My name is Sonia Flores, and I'm interning with the Morro Bay Economic Development Program as an associate planner. Just to give you a little bit of background about my, previously I was a coordinator for House Farm Workers of Ventura County, and in that job I worked to try to advocate for the creation of more affordable housing for farm workers and low-income families. And since then, I've actually entered the Cal Poly San Luis Obispo Masters of City and Regional Planning Program, and I'm halfway through that program now. Since the beginning of July, I have been helping to create a...
How you doing? It's me, Gary Hickson. I'm on YouTube now. It's under, you can find it, Warner Brothers gave me the clear light. I took the movie Inner Space with Martin Short and Randy Quaid. I took it down to 30 minutes. You can find it under Inner Space 30 Min Cut, not minute. So it's Inner Space 30 MIN Cut. And you can also find Gary Mirror Show, which is G-A-R-R-Y, Mirror Show, two R's. And I shot that out of my apartment. It shows the mirror vision. Here's the mirror vision here, kind of showing you. Can't really see it from here, but this is a mirror vision flyer that I sent to Google, Dell Computers, Amblin, Lucasfilm, people like that. There's a missing dog that I found this. I'm going to put this back on the thing. Her name is Mesa. She's been missing since April 16th. She has no collar. She has a chip. It's a pit bull. If you find this dog that's white on the front, call 805-423-0275. That's 805-423-0275. I live at 761 Butte Avenue, apartment 5. They're putting up a sign from the death of Ashley Malman, my best friend that was going to play Rhoda, called Please Buckle Your Seatbelts. We got $650 for the sign in the last 6 or 7 months. I'm paying the last $450 at Heritage Oats Banks. I already talked to Jeff and Cindy Malman. it's no fun losing your best friend. And I'm also going on Channel 2 to do the Gary Hickson Show. And you're all doing a great job. I used to work at the Great American Fish Company. George League remembers me. Take my glasses off for a second. And we used to have uniforms that were kind of blue and red. If I ever make it to Lucasfilm, hopefully we can get Randy and Barb and Cricket and some of the people, and maybe I told George maybe we could do Cheers there. And I think George League's doing a really good job. I was probably the fastest busser there. That's my 3 minutes. Thank you very much, and watch my show on YouTube, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks.
Is that my 3 minutes? That was it, right?
Yep. Thank
hey
you.
George, thanks.
Kim O'Brien, San Luis Obispo. Good evening, Mayor, Council members, everybody else. My concern is about the Morro Bay Aquarium RFP proposed that's going out. Previously, it was going to be required, not desirable, that they be AZA accredited, and I would really like to see that.
Excuse me. This is normally a public comment for items not on the agenda.
Oh, okay.
You know, if you can't stay, this is an appropriate time to do that. But, you know, it seems like you're kind of in midstream here. I just wanted to, you know, for people to know that usually this is public comment for people for items not on the agenda, but you're right in the middle, so I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I did, so keep going.
Okay. And I have one other suggestion. On page 12, under proposer selection, it states that the city may utilize services leading to consultants in areas of design, architecture, engineering, real estate, economics, and law. And I don't know if we could add something that would be more to do with a specialty consultant having to do with marine design. And that's pretty much it.
Okay.
Thank you
for that, Kim. So once again, this is public comment for items not on the agenda. For those of you to wish to speak on items not on the agenda, please do so now.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, and friends at home. My name is Keith Taylor. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I'm here just to say thank you to all the people in our community that volunteer on so many levels. You know, we have car shows, we have events, we have gardeners. We have so many things, and we have all these people that do all the work. And I just want to say thank you to them for doing what they do. The other thing I want to say, we're losing a really good police department person in Mary Sponholz, and I'm happy for her, but I'm sad for us. She's been here 12 years, and I think we're losing a really great person. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Keith. Anybody else for public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Bring it back to council for comments or questions on public comment. I'll look to my left. George, Christine.
I just wanted to ask Mr. Livick in Public Services, I'm guessing that you'll be following up Mr. Henderson on the petition that he presented, or what's the next step there? You don't have to have, just what do you think will be the follow-up?
There is a way, if by petition, though we don't have a policy that guides us through that.
I think I gave the example of the city of San Luis has a petition process.
Okay.
And that I didn't have this section in front of me at that time, and it's basically the council has the authority to cause any traffic control device to be placed without that device meeting standards. You will probably not receive a staff's recommendation that we place that device because it doesn't meet accepted engineering practice or standards recognized by Caltrans and the various traffic regulatory agencies.
Okay. All right.
But council does have that authority.
Okay. Thank you. All right. At this point, I'll bring it back. That concludes public comment. Thanks for your comments, Mr. Livick. And we'll move on to consent agenda. And in opening our consent agenda, we do have a public comment for items on the consent. Anybody that would like to speak to any items on consent agenda may do so now.
Richard Sadowski, Citizen of Morro Bay. I'd like to speak on item A3, which is the status report of the major maintenance repair plan for the existing wastewater treatment plant. Recently, the Cayuga Sanitary District had hired a consultant called Water Systems Consulting, and who presented a report that stated that the most economical option for Cayucas was to stay at the current location. The report was drafted by our former Public Works Director, Dylan Wade. On the Slow Coast Journal, you can read a rebuttal to that report addressing some of those issues. One of the things that is in the rebuttal is regarding this major maintenance and repair plan. There is evidence to suggest that some of these items that are being addressed appear that the citizens of Morro Bay are going to be subsidizing a project for Cayucas to be able to stay at the current plant. So I would like to present or request that the council put a stay on this item and address the fact that a joint powers agreement needs to be either drafted or a decision has to be made. It appears we're going in two different directions, and the regional board's NPDS permit is the joint powers agreement permit is in question here. And one of the things is, as a representative surf rider, you had a speaker here talking about the young lifeguards and stuff, how great that program is. Well, surf rider doesn't want sewage to be dumped into our beaches right there where the lifeguards are trained. And on top of that, have another town's sewage being dumped there and conveyed right through our town. So I would recommend that the council at least take a really close look and maybe get an outside consultant to take a really close look at this MMRP. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment for anything on the consent agenda? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council. And with that, we have any other remarks? We'll have a couple of items that we need to pull. But are there any other requests? I know we have to pull items A4 and A5 for Mr. Lee to recuse himself. Other than that, are there any other items to pull? Do I have a motion to approve items A1 through A3?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Nancy and a second by Christine. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Moving on to items A4 and A5, we'll pull those and ask for Mr. Lee to step down.
Yes, I have to step down because these are family-owned.
Thank you, George. Okay, we'll start with item A4. This is a resolution authorizing execution of a deed trust for lease site agreement 65 and 66 and 65W and 66W.
Items within the lease site that are corrected, and there's been some minor violations on this lease site. So we're asking staff is to approve the estoppel certificate subject to that amendment coming back in 2 weeks to address those issues that need to be addressed in the lease. And they're concerning signage and bathrooms being open and other maintenance issues. So we'll bring that lease back to you in 2 weeks if you do approve this. And we'll also not execute the estoppel certificate until those amendments are also approved.
Great. Thanks for that report. Any questions from council? Do I have a motion to approve item A4 subject to amendment to the lease?
So moved.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
So I have a motion by Nancy and a second by Noah. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Moving on to item A5. This also just a consent item. This is just a formality to go through this process for Mr. Lee to step down. Do we have a motion to approve A5?
Move approval of A5.
We have a motion, and do we have a second?
Second.
Motion by Nancy, second by Noah. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. And that completes our consent agenda at this time. We just take a 5-minute break, and we'll come back. And since we're running the way we are, let's make sure we can contain it to 5 minutes and be right back. All right. Thanks, folks. We're back. Thank you. We're getting back into the swing of things here. We are now into public hearing items, and we're on to item B1, which is appeal of administrative decision regarding the request for payment of reduced impact fees for a residential project located at 281 Main Street, and that would be Mr. Livick.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council. As you said, this item is an appeal of staff's decision to deny reduction in impact fees for a residential project at 281 Main Street, with the applicants being John and Alaire Huff. The city staff received a letter on June 20th requesting a reduction in the impact fees for their project located at 281 Main Street. Staff reviewed the submittal dates for their project, and we also discussed the merits of this with the city attorney, and the The request for the reduction in impact fees did not meet the requirements stipulated in the Council Resolution 14-13 for the restoration of residential impact fees. That resolution stated that those projects that had technical planning applications after October 30th, 2012, but before the date of the resolution, should pay the reduced fees, or if they had building permit applications in during that time, they could also pay the reduced fees. This project application was made on March 16th, 2012. It was not a technically complete letter, so the presumption is that it was technically complete about 15 days or when the legal notice went out for the project, so on or about May 1st of 2012. The project was heard at the Planning Commission on May 16th. The project was appealed to City Council and was heard at City Council on July 10th, 2012. The project was further appealed to Coastal Commission. And then on October 23rd, 2012, City Council adopted that resolution that reduced residential impact fees. On February 13th, Council rescinded that resolution and set forth the parameters that I just discussed for the allowance for projects that were had some reliance on a past council decision to take the ability to have those impact fees reduced. In staff's opinion, there was no reliance on a future City Council decision. So in conclusion, that based on the record, staff's opinion is there was no reliance on Council's October 23rd action, and therefore they are subject to the full residential impact fees as restored by Council in February of this year under Resolution 14-13. And that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Livick. To my left, I'll look for any questions from Council. And over here to my left, to my right, Nancy.
I think my confusion here is on the building permit. What date was that actually submitted on, and is that kind of the crux of this?
Well, the building permit was just submitted just recently on June 6, 2013. The staff's conclusion was based on the applicant's original submittal, which was back in March of 2012, a little over 7 months prior to Council taking action on the reduction in impact fees.
Okay, so the reduction in impact fees became
effective October 23rd, 2012.
2012, and then it was changed on February 13th. Okay, thank you.
Any more questions to the right? Seeing none, I just have one question on the resolution. It states that be it further resolved that those projects that have technically complete planning applications, so this applicant, at what point were they technically complete? And basically, that statement is basically leads to, if they're technically complete before the date, then they should only pay the impact fees set forth by Resolution 5212. So where your report was pretty concise on the timeline, but just the technically complete part.
The city did not issue a technically complete letter, so my presumption was they're technically complete prior to going to their Planning Commission hearing, because they have to be complete, and we would be past practices that they are complete at the time of note public notice, and that public notice is sent out 15 days prior to the Planning Commission hearing. And the Planning Commission hearing was on May 16, 2012, so I would presume that they were technically complete right around the first of the month or the end of April. So they were technically complete prior to October 23rd. So before council made action reducing the impact fees, they had already made a decision to submit their project.
Okay, thank you for that. Seeing no more questions, I'll bring it to the applicant, appellant, Ms. Novak.
Good evening, Mayor Irons and council members. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here this evening representing the Huffs for their appeal, since they are out of town and unable to make this meeting. As always, I'd like to thank staff for their time. However, I must respectfully disagree with their recommendation. I sent a letter on behalf of the Huffs for a determination that their single-family residents qualify for a reduction in the development impact fees that the council had put in place last year. I certainly hope that you had a chance to read this letter and understand that it is a reasonable request. As I indicated in the letter, the original project was approved by the council on July 10, 2012, and subsequently appealed to the California Coastal Commission. The final hearing, whereby the Coastal Commission voted unanimously to deny the appeal and allow the city's decision to stand, was not done until March 6, 2013. In reviewing this request, I believe that there are important time frames and several key facts that need to be considered, as well as the city's traditional position for determining projects that are, quote, in the pipeline and would qualify for fee reductions or any other actions that the City Council places on planning and building permits. First, at the August 14, 2012 City Council meeting, a future agenda item to discuss the planning and building fees, which included the residential impact fees, was declared. This item lingered and was not brought back to Council until the end of October. In the October staff report under the background section, it states, quote, in February 2012, Council Member Borchardt, during a declaration of future agenda items, received support to bring back a discussion of the reduction of residential impact fees, end quote. So importantly, this item to discuss the impact fee reductions began in early 2012. Second, the City Council ultimately, this is an important point in understanding the overall timing and consideration for qualifications for this request. Because the appeal is to the Coastal Commission, the Huffs suffered the consequences of not being able to submit their plans in a timely fashion. This is a classic example of a project that was caught within the bureaucratic maze of reviewing and approving permits. Just so that you know what transpired at the California Coastal Commission, I was notified by the Commission staff in August that they were tentatively setting a hearing date for the September meeting. However, time slipped by and the Commission staff on several occasions communicated that the project would be set for a hearing soon. The Huffs sent a letter to the Coastal Commission in early December requesting a hearing in the January, since it was going to be in Pismo Beach and therefore would allow the Commission's preference to have the meeting in close proximity to the proposed project. The Huffs were told that due to staffing and other projects, namely the city's wastewater treatment plant, that they could not schedule this for a January meeting. To add complications to this already lengthy process, the Coastal Commission staff changed staff planners, so we essentially started over again, provided an overview of the project and other information that had been previously discussed to the new staff. As I mentioned, the Coastal Commission ultimately scheduled this hearing for March 6, 2013, and at the end of the time, they voted unanimously for a no substantial issue determination, which is their terminology for denying the appeal. By the time the Coastal Commission had reached the decision, the Council had already adopted Resolution 14-13, therefore precluding the Huffs from submitting for a building permit within the prescribed time frame in that resolution. Because of this untimely delay at the Coastal Commission, the Huffs were finally able to submit for a building permit in early June. It is also important to note here that the Huffs were not able to prepare construction drawings or submit for a city building permit until after the Commission hearing so that the correct project plans were submitted. The Huffs have gone to great lengths to design a house that is in character with the neighborhood, proof being that both the Council and the Coastal Commission denied the appeals, and established that they had every intent of pursuing a construction permit as soon as possible for the approvals after they were done. As I have described, the situation is an anomaly. You can verify with staff, but I believe it is safe to say that there is not another project in the system that would be in the same position as this. Therefore, granting this request would not open the floodgates for other requests. In all fairness, the city has traditionally considered projects to be in the pipeline when applicants have diligently pursued obtaining both planning and building permits. However, in your Resolution 14-13, the technically complete planning application and the building permit section created a hole whereby this project just fell in and was dismissed. I can understand staff's concern about for setting precedents. However, I believe that this in this request is extremely unique and can be granted without setting precedents for detrimental reliance. Therefore, I would respectfully ask the council to do one of the following. One would be to determine that this project was within the time period as specified in Resolution 52-12, which specifically says, quote, that any residential project for either discretionary and or building permit approval and any project that has not been issued a building permit as of October 23, 2012 shall be eligible, end quote. Number two, adopt findings that would allow this project to qualify for the impact fee reductions. The findings can be made so narrowly that it defines the parameters for which this project can qualify, but at the same time prevent the precedents for detrimental reliance. In particular, it can be said that this project was subject to an appeal at the California Coastal Commission and had not been to a hearing and was also considered as technically complete or was considered during the time frame that the council determined the project must qualify based upon the resolutions that the council has passed. Or number three, amend your Resolution 14-13 to clarify the meaning of technically complete planning applications to include residential projects that are pending before the California Coastal Commission on appeal and shall be included and shall pay the impact fees as set by the prior resolution. In closing, the Huffs have spent a considerable amount of money for permitting and the decision to move forward sooner rather than later for the actual construction of a new single-family home when they became aware of these fee reductions. They have actively done everything in their means to finish the planning permits and start the construction permit process in a timely manner. On the Huffs' behalf, I would like to say that penalizing them now for circumstances beyond their control seems patently unfair, and especially since they have suffered from unfounded appeals and damaging delays. This concludes my presentation. I would respectfully ask the council to grant this reasonable request, since this is clearly should have been within the parameters of the council's resolutions. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kathy. Any questions for the appellant? Right, none? Okay. At this time, we can open up public comment for this item. Anybody who wishes to speak on this item, public comment, you have 3 minutes to do so. Please state your name and come forward.
Betty Winholt, and I live in the same neighborhood as the Huffs. In fact, I am the one that made the appeal. The appeal was winning, so I hope that you will uphold staff's recommendation.
Thank you. Any others for public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council. And with that, on to discussion. To my left, George, do you have any comments for this?
Well, we sure rattled around a lot of dates there, you know. When this was done, when that was done, when it wasn't done. And it gets a little confusing. I think these people were caught up in kind of the maze of the whole thing. This is a unique deal, little project. I remember it coming forth and it being denied and sent to the Coastal Commission for review. But I think these people actually got caught up into something here, and it looks like to me, personally, personally, you know how I feel about impact fees anyway, but I think these people, I think they deserve to have a break here on this one. I know it's kind of a borderline case, but the more I look at it, I really think they should be given a break on this one.
Thanks. Thanks, George. Christine?
Thank you. I think that it's, for this one, it's very easy to fall into a bit of emotional feelings about something starting at one point and then having it extended beyond perhaps some of the applicant or the homeowner's original plans, and having it go to another judicial body does certainly add time to anyone's construction. For me, what it boils down to, though, is I'm trying to look at it without any of that emotional side to it, and just focusing on the date that the first application was made to build their single-family home. And if the staff report and the council feel comfortable that that date is the March 16th, 2012, then that does seem to me to be quite a bit prior to even that August 14th date that Ms. Novak referenced in her letter and her report, that consideration of a change in impact fees was coming to the council. Even if you've given that August 14th date, which would be something that perhaps the first time the community had heard about a council member's intent to bring something forward and the council's agreement to bring something forward for consideration, even if you take that August 14th date ahead of the October 23rd, 2012 date where the City Council did adopt the resolution reducing some residential impact fees, it seems to me logically that this couple made a decision to build here in Morro Bay prior to even that August date. So I'm looking at it very factually, and at this point I'm leaning toward standing with the staff decision at this point, but I look forward to council discussion.
Thank you. Nancy?
I think this whole project goes way beyond logic and dates. Once again, we have someone who wants to build a single-family home who has been subject to unfounded appeals that happens over and over again, and it really extended their time. It cost them a lot of money to deal with this, and I really, really feel that we need to determine findings that can qualify this project for the reduced development impact fees. I mean, this was once again somebody who wants to build a home and has been stopped, and I just think we need to take a stand and do something to support people who want to build and add to the economy in our community.
Thank you. Noah?
Thank you. I see a situation where the homeowners, property owners, are in the process of building that home, and I am in agreement with the staff's recommendation. I'm particularly concerned about extending a benefit that wouldn't be available to anyone else at this time. And what we have currently with our impact fees is a standard that was reached through community input and a compromise reduced from the original point that was put forward years ago. And I think they're fair. They're very important for maintaining our fire and police and water services, sewer services, parks, so forth. And at $9,000, I think they are fair for a home of this size. And
with appropriately, so instead of just making a resolution without recognizing that, I think it was pretty thoughtful with that. And so the resolution considered what projects were in the pipeline, and this one just fell outside of that according to the timeline and the staff reports that we have. With that, I'm in agreement with the staff recommendation as well, and I would move that we proceed with the staff recommendation. Is there any other discussion on this item? Seeing none,
I'll move that we uphold staff decision and deny the reduction in impact fees per City Council Resolution 14-13.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
A second.
So we have a motion by Noah, second by Christine. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed?
No.
None?
No.
Motion carries 3-2. Nancy and George, the two. All right, thank you, Mr. Livick. Moving on to item C1. Let me just flip through this a minute. Okay, approval of draft request for proposals for lease site 6970 and 69W70W, the Morro Bay Aquarium, and that would be Mr. Endersby.
Good evening, and thank you, Mayor and Council. Tonight we have before you consideration and approval of a draft request for proposals for lease site 6970, 69W70W. Someday we're going to rename these lease sites so they come out a little easier. Which is the Morro Bay Aquarium. At the June 25th council meeting, council directed staff to come back with a draft request for proposals for the aquarium lease site. It's a 50-year Pipkin lease. It expires in September 2018. We started with the template RFP based on the vacant lease sites that we did earlier this year. Took the site-specific things with the Morro Bay Aquarium site, crafted them in, and then also crafted in the council-directed elements from the council meeting on the 25th, which were that the site remain a marine aquarium and education and or education facility, that a solid financial plan was in place, turnaround time that kind of honored the timeliness of the issue and also reflecting the expiration of the lease site. And last, I've added on, because this will take considerable more comment, AZA accreditation, which is the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which is a worldwide group that accredits and certifies aquariums and zoos around the world as meeting certain standards. That was one of council's wishes. We put all those things in the RFP. The AZA accreditation was crafted in a manner such that it wasn't required and as a sort of a from out of the gate standpoint in terms of, you know, when this new facility opens, whatever it be, when it's rebuilt, not necessarily being able to meet that accreditation, but able to work toward it. I did it in this manner, and I know we've had some comments because of that from the public. I did it in this manner because AZA accreditation can take years to get. You don't get it just right off the bat because you open a facility. It's a long, difficult process requiring a lot of design elements, recording documents. Takes years of documented history of running a facility to meet AZA accreditation. It can be fairly costly, and it's quite possible that a facility the size of what may be built on this lease site and even expand it out, if we can expand it out, may not be able to financially meet that as a nonprofit type organization. So we crafted, and at least I attempted to craft the RFP to reflect council's wishes, yet recognize that it's going to be a work in progress to get that accreditation. It doesn't just happen right out of the bat. I think the RFP reflects that we want to work in that direction. I think the lease itself will really nail down the details. We obviously want whatever the facility is to work towards meeting those standards and seek accreditation throughout the term of the lease, and that can be in the lease as well. But at this point, from what I've learned from, I've actually become a supporting member of AZA to start getting more educated about it and also gain access into their documents and their history. As I've learned about it, this is my understanding of AZA. Currently, even the Avila Sea Life Center, now the Central Coast Sea Life Center, is not AZA accredited. They'd love to be. They're working in that direction. All their facilities and work product that they do, they attempt and work towards AZA standards, but at this time they're not even accredited. So that's why I crafted it the way I did. Otherwise, I'm open.
I know. We'll just keep going. Keep going. Any others? Noah?
Yes, I do have a couple of questions. One is on page 8 of the RFP. We're looking at the parking scenarios, or the parking comments there.
Which page are you on, Noah?
Page 8, item G, parking. And I just wanted to hear, to confirm, are because the parking area existing is potentially in play for a proposal, are those parking spots, as existing parking spots, the 11 that we're seeing here? I wanted to confirm that publicly.
No, there's no site specifically designated per lease site. It's just historically the parking credits that building or that lease site gets based on its history and what its uses have been and the conditional use permits and whatnot it's gotten over the years, has been deemed to be 11. So it's, you know, if you build a new facility and it requires, you know, 20 parking spaces, it has 11 of them, and you'd need to come up with 9 more.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that then, a proposal that would expand into that parking area would obviously result in a loss of the parking existing, but could then work to tie better into the trolley and public transportation system, and perhaps we will be looking further at things such as the Dynegy parking lot to expand public parking in that route, and there's options for us to make sure we're not creating a further impact in parking on the Embarcadero.
Yeah, there's all sorts of those kind of options can come into play. Also some underground or building above and parking below options. It's, you know, I don't think anything's off the table at this point.
Okay, good. And another quick question on page 9. There's a comment there about the city's convening a selection panel, and I just wanted you to speak just briefly to that so public saw how that process would work. And you may want to lead into number 4 then. Just
is that based on the public comment you heard earlier, or just in general on the selection process?
Just in general, so we're getting as much information out there as possible at this point.
Yeah, I think, you know, once we receive RFPs, we put together a selection panel that will grade them based on our grading criteria. That will go eventually to the Harbor Advisory Board and eventually work its way back to City Council. I think your comment we had earlier from the public about an expert or somebody based in marine design or marine education or maybe marine aquaria is a good one that we can certainly put in. But the general process as outlined is one that we've done. Basically followed the last RFP we did, which was for what used to be the Whale's Tail, what's now the Rocco's. So it follows that general procedure.
Although that one didn't end up going to the Harbor Advisory Board.
That went to the Harbor Advisory Board.
Okay. So that was something that I perceived as somewhat of a new step. Is that something that you're thinking because of the heightened awareness of this, the sensitivity of this project, that we try to vet it through the Harbor Advisory Board, or what was your thoughts with including that stuff?
I think you're definitely, that's the thinking. Given another level of public review, it's an important lease site, and obviously it's an important use, and it's got a lot of history, and we just want to make sure we get it right and get all the input we can and have everybody's 2 cents on it, on the whole matter.
Okay. And my last one is with the timeline on page 18 and also page 2 of the cover letter. Let me get there. So we're with the issue of the RFP, are you anticipating holding to that September 19th? Because I know we asked to bring this back as soon as possible, and here we are today. Do you see this changing at all based on our actions today?
I don't think so. I think as long as we keep moving forward, you know, it's a tentative proposal schedule. I think back in June, we were even thinking of bringing it to this second meeting in August, so we're a little ahead of the game. So, no, I think we're trying to stick to this schedule if at all possible.
Okay, and if possible, even expediting that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if we can make it whatever we want. It's tentative until we put it on paper and get the RFP out.
So what I'm getting at is if we get everything in order after tonight and going forward, this timeline could be moved up, not by a lot, but by a week or two potentially.
Yeah.
Just so people could be aware that because this is coming to us earlier, mm-hmm. this might shift subtly. Just a point there. Those are my questions.
Okay, thanks. Eric, I just have a question on page 5. Since we were talking about liberties, if you might, as far as how the AZA council direction was on whether or not we had a requirement for AZA, and this is on a page 11, but your comment about at a minimum meet the AZA design, so that's a follow-up. You know, the direction from council was, you know, go out for AZA accreditation, and just to follow up on your comment about...
It's perfectly in your purview and perfectly understandable. Just add it in there. If somebody wants to propose, that doesn't mean they can't. They can put in anything they'd like, but we wanted aquarium and marine education.
Okay. And then as far as timelines and ROCOs, for an example, you were mentioning that that came back and went through Harbor Advisory. You're not too sure whether or not that went through that process, and just want to cover the process that we're going through on that. So you weren't sure whether or not that went through the Harbor Advisory Board, and so what's the normal path that we've gone through? And this is what you're saying, this is kind of a selective thing?
Well, in terms of Harbor Advisory Board, did the Whale's Tail or Rocco's RFP go through? I wasn't doing this back when that one went through, so without having it right in front of me and reading it, I couldn't tell if it did or not. That's why I couldn't answer that. As far as this process, like I said, I think we do the selection process, and they come up with a graded score sheet on the different proposals, and that goes to Harbor Advisory Board, and they weigh in on it. And eventually, it comes to council in terms of primary and secondary, maybe even tertiary proposers, and grade everybody, and then it's up to council to really make the final decision.
So I'll direct the question to Mr. Schultz, since you probably have a little bit more time on the RFPs as well, and that's the timeline. So your experience on other RFPs and timelines, how does this one reflect historically?
We had originally given a little bit more time and actually shortened it up a little bit. So it's ambitious, but again, this is just to get the RFPs in the door, not actually the selection through Harbor into you. So, I think it's enough time for the applicants, whoever wants to get it out there and get it noticed and give them enough time to do their drawings. You know, it's not the same as the Main and Morro Bay Boulevard one, which is just a lease and the building's already there. We want to see detailed architectural concept plans for this to be drawn up and to show us exactly what their proposal is. So it's a lot more in depth, and I think it's realistic that we can get it within this time frame and get good proposals.
Okay, thanks. Those are all the questions I have. At this point, we can open it up for public comment. Those who would wish to speak on this item may do so now. You have 3 minutes to speak. And anybody would like to speak on this? Looks like we have none. Oh, we have one. Here we go.
Good evening. Marla Jo Bruton, North Morro Bay, and good to see you all back off hiatus. We missed you. I wasn't planning to speak on this, however. I take issue with the Harbor Advisory Board's the intensity of involvement that they have in making selection process. And I just would, if you do it the way that he's proposing, I just ask this council to keep an ear to the ground on those discussions and what have you, so that you're not left out of some valuable information or input that you may think is important that an advisory board doesn't, or perhaps they're kind of led by staff or anybody else, like permit facilitators, in a direction that wouldn't necessarily be in the best interest of the city of Morro Bay. So, and then the other thing, I have no idea. This is just, I've been thinking about it for a couple years, but since that's the Morro Bay Tidelands Grant area, the outfalls that are at that site, if they were not used, turns out that the site is too small for an aquarium to use, the seawater and what have you. Is there any way that the city of Morro Bay could investigate using those outfalls as a stormwater catchment, directing of stormwater catchment and treatment, collecting a watershed-wide? It's a big project in a little space, but is there any way that the city could preserve that and use that underneath the building? So that if you have a marine education center that doesn't require an intake outfall, that the city, through the Tidelands Grant, for the public benefit of all, could do something like a stormwater catchment. Yahoo! Aren't we having fun? Thank you.
Thank you, Marla.
Betty Wendell's that staff bosses the council because they take your direction and they turn it around and they word it the way they want. If there is something that staff would suggest that you need to look at, that it should come in that form, not in an already prepared presentation to you, but they would raise that up to you as questions before they do the final product. And if you don't address that issue, where they're now, in a sense, bossing you and telling you what it's going to be, and you don't take that back and make it into the proposal that you directed them to, then again, we're not going to see you as the strong council that we thought we were electing.
Thank you. Any more for public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council, and I'll make a quick response to Ms. Winholtz on that. As far as liberties, I think to respond to that, I think there's two things about that, and maybe the other part of that is to have that interaction at the time we make those motions for an RFP. As an example, if we made the motion for the RFP to have AZA compliant, that dialogue probably would have been better served then to discuss what our options are as far as should we consider meeting those instead of, as what Ms. Winholtz is saying, having it come up in our report. So I think the message is there, and I think it's heard. So with that, I'll turn it back to the item at hand, and that is our RFP. We've convened on questions and everything. I'll turn to my left for discussion. George?
Looks like we had a can of worms here. One question I have, Eric, when we were talking about the parking there, how would you, if this becomes a new project, will there be additional parking required of these? And how would you determine how much parking a place like that would have? I mean, there's just a flow of people through it all the time.
I'm burning holes in the back of Mr. Leivick's head here, and I think he senses it.
I'll take an attempt to answer that question. It's pretty common that there's redevelopment of commercial spaces all over town. So with these older spaces, there's no parking lot that's associated with that.
I understand.
So we calculate what the square footage of that place is and what the under the time of that development and redevelopment, what the parking requirements would have been. So there are 11 historic spaces. There's not 11 physical spaces there, but they get credit for 11 spaces. Let's say that council decides somebody puts an RFP for a restaurant or a something else besides an aquarium, and it moves forward. Well, there's a different calculation for the amount of parking that's required. So instead of one for every 300 square feet, let's say it's one for every 150 square feet. So that would be double the amount of parking that would be required for that. They don't have it available to put it on site, so they would be paying parking in lieu to accommodate that parking is how that would happen. I hope that answered the question.
Yeah, we got so much parking down here. Well, I really don't know where to go with this because this has been such a problem from the get-go. Anyway, I'm going to pass it on for right now.
Christine?
Okay, thank you very much. I was looking forward to the opportunity to refine the RFP, and I think that all of us on the council know, and I think that the community knows too, that this is a draft that's been brought forward tonight, and this is the time for input from the community and from the council on to refining the process, so I look forward to that. My first step to do that is page 6. In the bolded paragraph, it's the third paragraph down where there's some historical information written about what is currently on the site. The second sentence, or the third perhaps, begins, "The Morro Bay Aquarium became a rehabilitation center for distressed mammals in 1984 and features sea lions and harbor seals." I would just put that out, the question to staff, and then I think, but currently that's, it's not operating as a rehabilitation center?
That is correct.
Okay, so if keeping that in there is fine with me, and then I'm thinking if we add it, however, it is not currently operating as a rehabilitation center. And the reason I asked for that clarification is because I think that's factual. And then the second reason is that we would want to give the impression that the new anyone who has a new idea perhaps on that site would have to accommodate a rehabilitation center, which would be difficult and already being done by another group. So wouldn't have that. Am I correct on that? Five community members. Seven if you count the council.
Yes.
And three with the staff. Okay. I know we're kind of a hybrid up here, though. We're sort of in the community, sort of, we're just not the normal community person anymore. So I would like to use that model if we could and find a way to create that selection panel. For me, it would be good if we perhaps pulled two or so from the current Harbor Advisory Board that would represent the time spent there, perhaps, put them on the initial selection panel, and then that panel would bring forward their suggestions directly to council. It would give input for the Harbor Advisory Board members in that process. So these are just things I'm bringing up for, I'd like to have discussion with my colleagues on that. So I would suggest then that we discuss in a little bit more detail the selection panel for this RFP, and then what the makeup would be. In addition to, I know that Mr. Endersby also had suggested at one point in a conversation that we might want to add perhaps the, if it is going to, of course we don't know whether it will be a project that will or will not have any kind of a marine being or a marine animal of any type, but it may be helpful since we've completely, that we have requested that be a possibility, that we may have invite maybe the county animal control or animal services director, I think Mr. Anderson, I believe, from the county. But that's just someone like that, maybe another person to add in. So if we can maybe have that discussion. And then another discussion I'd like to have would be on page 12 and page 13. They kind of run together. I'd like the council to take a look at the different point values that are given to those nine sections and decide if the points meet the priorities. And then if we could, at the end of that discussion, put this list in priority order, I think it would be much more clear for any applicants to take a look at. So I have some suggestions of point values that we could alter. So I wanted to know if anyone else did, if we wanted to. So those are the two things that I think would require discussion. So before moving forward, I just wanted to know if that would be other things that other folks have thought about too. But I can put them on your list, Mr. Mayor?
Yeah. Okay. I do have the list going right now.
So that would be the end of my list.
Thanks. And let's move on to my right and see what we have working up, and we'll follow up on those discussion items. Nancy?
Okay. Back to looking at page 6. I think that's a valid point, that it is not currently working, run as a center for distressed animals. I also, and I kind of hate to say this, lots of ways I hate to say this, but if we're going to add that, the part that Dean and Bertha Taylor were designated as living treasures really doesn't have anything to do with this, I don't think. I think they're wonderful. I'm glad they're living treasures, but I don't think this is the place for that piece of information. Page 9, I like the idea of the selection committee, and I like the idea of using our model that we used for the wastewater plant. I would also suggest, I think putting out a request for people who are interested in joining brought us lots of very valuable, capable people who had great expertise in what we were looking for, and I think we could probably find that again. And the point values, I'm just going to not comment on that right now. That's it for the moment.
Okay, Noah?
Thank you. I'll start at the top there, and I do agree on the adjustments that were suggested on page 6 under the history, the comment about a licensed, no longer a licensed rehabilitation facility, and then striking the last sentence, I think, is concise and gives the detail, background detail that a proposer could use. I generally want to point out something in page 5 under objectives, and it's the second sentence here regarding the city desires to have the property redeveloped in a manner which will continue to provide a unique visitor-serving marine aquarium and or marine educational opportunity, as well as an economic return to the harbor department. I'm cautious there because from my perspective, and I think we should clarify this tonight, and I would say that we can do that through the selection methodology and the values there, is the economic return to the harbor department, particularly direct economic, because I am cautious about politicizing this. This is a very sensitive area. And also, though, the panel gives us the potential for stronger community buy-in and understanding, and I think maybe a more dynamic review and recommendation to the council. So I'm willing to go there. One of the thoughts I had was 2 council members, 3 staff, general marine-related position. I thought, you know, the tourism and chamber definitely have some relations there. Perhaps there might be worthwhile to include that.
So let's get into that discussion when you're done.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I thought it was a good idea to have a Harbor Advisory Board rep. So that would round it out to 10 if we wanted to do the tourism / chamber. A fishing representative would also be interesting. So perhaps we reduce the tourism / chamber component.
You're willing to discuss the selection. So are there any other points you want to discuss then?
No.
Okay. Then let me.
There are other points deeper in, but along the selection committee, that's my input.
So I'm just going to recap where we are for discussions. We've got editorial, selection committee, and points, or that kind of covers what we're going to be discussing. Is there anything else on that? Then let's just cover the editorials right off the bat. And on page five, you have. No, you had the one sentence about as well as the economic return on the Harbor Department. You had some points to make on that. I understand your thoughts on that as far as the significance of making the change. I just, what are your thoughts to be specific?
I guess to be specific, I'd suggest changing it to as well as. I'm thinking more indirect economic benefits to the harbor, or I'm seeing a potential scenario where we're not charging a traditional lease format to this facility because of the strong public benefits that we're expecting from it and the nonprofit structure that will be there. I'm willing to explore that. We could leave this sentence alone because I think there's ways within the selection methodology for us to achieve that and to perhaps strengthen some things and include some language there, because there needs to be some return, but I'm not expecting anything along the lines of what we'd call for from a restaurant or a hotel.
Sure. I think Nancy had something on that as well.
First, I had a question for Eric. Currently, what's the current income? Are they paying anything above their base rent?
It's a Pipkin lease, and it only pays a base rent. There's no percentage of growth.
So there no is there. Okay. Do you have any idea what the percent, if they did, what it would be? I know that's asking you to kind of read a crystal ball here, but.
It would depend on the percent, obviously. I would guess how they've been operating the past 50 years, that even if they're at a 3% or a 5%, and 3 to 5 is typical for retail, restaurant, bar, they're all different. I would hazard a guess to say that, currently what they've charged historically, they probably wouldn't kick above their minimum rent. percent gross sales.
It's
they don't sell a lot.
It's impossible to tell because they're not under the modern lease, so we don't know what their minimum rent would be set at because it hasn't been appraised. And so it's at the original Pipkin, so there's no way to tell what revenue would have been brought in if it was under our current lease.
Okay. I have a quick question.
Let me just follow up with a question
what you're talking about as well as far as the sense. Is there is this unique to this RFP, looking at some of the other RFPs that I compared to this, the necessity of having that sentence in there? Is there something other suggestion you might have on this particular sentence that Noah's bringing up?
It was standard language that was in our other ones, but there's no requirement.
Okay, so it is a standard language. It's not something that's going to interfere with anything.
And everything you've discussed so far is from a staff standpoint. Yeah. We had lively discussions about each one of these, the points, the economic return, all of them, the language about the aquarium. So it's all good points. It's draft, and you're welcome to change or remove anything that you feel necessary.
Sorry, Nancy, I just wanted to help with that.
Well, I think especially based on what Mr. Schultz just said, but also a major part of our city income comes from our leases, our waterfront leases. And if it's not going to be economically if it's not going to be economically satisfactory for the city, I don't think we want to enter into a lease with somebody who's not going to be. I mean, I certainly understand the importance of a visitor-serving aquarium or...
Both of those things are going to cost quite a bit of money to develop. So I'm thinking of ways to ensure that we can deliver and that we get quality proposals.
Yeah, and I think we will. So we're okay with this, the one sentence. I think the other one we had, and I'm just going page by page because we only have a few pages, and that would be on page 6. And I think I spoke to that earlier, the last sentence of the last paragraph, and I would strike that sentence. Any other comments on that?
And also, it's the consensus also to mention there that they're not currently. A rehabilitation center. That was the other change on that paragraph.
And that was on page 6.
Correct.
And do we know where that is? Do you guys have an eye on that?
Yes.
Okay. And then the other one on page 6 was the last sentence in regards to Living Treasure, striking that. Okay. And then I think that's all the editorials. Is that correct? Okay, cool. Then we can move on to selection committee and points. And let's start with the selection committee. Christine, you brought that up. Do you want to lead a conversation on that?
Sure. Thank you. I would like to ask Noah to just review your list. You had a quick rundown of people.
And this is just like kind of a quick shot, and it's off of what you had said. 2 council members, 3 staff, marine specialist, 2 harbor advisory board, and then I was suggesting a tourism / chamber position or 2, but it might be worthwhile to also have a recreation or and or fishing rep as well. So we could adjust that as necessary.
Okay, I feel comfortable with 10. Does everyone else? Too many? Too big?
I'm not
smaller.
10. Yeah, I am. Okay. I think it's a great subject, but. Personally, I was looking at that, and it's a great topic, but I was, in the simplest form, I'm not comfortable with 10, but I don't know what other comments are on that. Do you have any comments, Nancy?
I could be comfortable with 10, considering how well it worked for the wastewater plant, but I would like to not be so specific. I liked the way we each voted for people to be on it based on their qualifications, and I can see we want 2 council and we want staff and maybe the harbor board members, but I think beyond that we want to be less specific and see what we get in terms of people who are applying to be on this committee. It was amazing to me the people that came out of our community with their background and expertise in an area we didn't even know they had. And I really truly believe we can get the same kind of thing by just sending out a request for people to apply for the committee. And I could be happy with less members, but I really think we'll get a good balanced group. It'll be more community oriented if we don't put specific guidelines on who can apply.
George, did you have any comments?
Not really. I agree with Nancy. It seemed like it worked real well for the wastewater. But, you know, if you're going to put on two city council people, two staff members, two people from the harbor, a fisherman, he's going to get down there. There wasn't going to be much left if you're going to keep it at 10. And you're talking even about less. So I don't think we can get by with less than 10.
Okay, there you go. Seems like we're more towards 10 than anything else, which is fine. And you're right, we had a great selection committee with the RFP for the wastewater treatment plant, the RFD, consultant, and it was a good process. With that, well, then let's line it out and be specific on how we want to do that. And we're going to have to be flexible if we're going to go out through the process of selecting these folks, as we did with the RFP for the consultant, then, you know, that's another layer and another process. So that's probably something we should visit sooner rather than later and get going on that. But so far, you know, I've got a list going, but do we want to complete that?
Well, I would just suggest that you could ask the Harbor Advisory Board if we're doing it in a large scale. But could I ask, before we move on, actually, Jamie, what were you thinking? I'd like to know.
Oh, no, actually, no, that was just my thought on it.
Okay.
As far as trimming it down. But the reality is we had that same number on the RP for the waste.
I could see this happening during and gathering the committee together, appointing the committee, getting it all prepared in the process of receiving the RFP and the proposals so that we're not creating delays in
absolutely
that process.
Mm-hmm.
Does that
yeah
seem doable with staff then?
Okay.
And so, I think, too, you want to make sure that that is in the RFP as well, right, that there would be community members and a variety of folks so that those applicants know.
The selection committee as determined by council.
Correct. And I think a good way to do it was is in January when you're selecting your other advisory boards, we could advertise at the same time and you could select it in January and it'll be ready in March when it comes around.
Okay. So good one, George. So we have 2, 2, 2 and 4 at large. 2 council, 2 staff, 2 harbor, and 4 at large. Perfect. Okay, so we've got our selection done. Now last point, get it? Points.
Okay, so this is page 12 and 13, but you have to go on both pages, midpoint to each, under C, selection methodology. So I'll just throw out a few and here's some other feedback. So when I was reading through, it occurred to me that number 5 is, in my opinion, extremely important because realistically it takes a lot of resources, financial resources, to build something on the Embarcadero. We heard that. We hear that all the time about the investment it takes. So I would like to see us acknowledge number 5, maybe up to 15 or 20 points, because reality is the best idea in the world isn't going to get it built unless there's financial backing. So I'll just start with that one and say I'd like to see number 5 get 20 points in value. I'm comfortable with number 2 having 20 points in value. But we'll have, if we're going to stay at the current total, we'll have to take something away from another. So I could see perhaps you would subtract something from number 4. Perhaps number 4 doesn't have to be 15, and perhaps there's some subtraction elsewhere. So I'll just throw out, I'm comfortable with number 2. Oh, obviously number 1 is pass-fail. I'm comfortable with number 2. I think that's absolutely true, that would be a 20-point value. I could see perhaps then discussion on the value for 3. I can see subtracting a value from 4 and bumping up 5. Meanwhile, I'm very comfortable with 10 on 6, 10 on 7, And then 8, I just wanted to point out, we're giving that a value of 15 points. This is the AZA designation. And I think that a point that I know that Mr. Endersby told me about that I'm not sure he mentioned in his staff report. He did briefly, but I wanted to just point out that the AZA accreditation, part of the accreditation, and please correct me, Mr. Endersby, about it, is it takes time. You gain the accreditation over time. Is that, there's some sort of an element to that? Could you explain that just a little bit
more? Yeah, as I understand it, the accreditation, you have to build a track record. You have to prove that you're complying with their standards and conditions as you go along. It's not something you just get right straight the first day you open, so it does take time. Certainly from a point standpoint, we can craft it to where obviously the emphasis on it and it becomes the proposal and what they propose and what they write out and intend to do, I think would be where the scoring would go up and down depending on how strongly they try to comply and adhere to that.
And I think too that I do, during our original discussion on this item, I do think it's important to think about a possible replacement type aquarium, but I think it's also any marine education center, we should very, very much be open to other creative ideas rather than updating, you know, what's there currently to meet AZA standards. Who knows what this kind of RFP will bring in? So that just kind of keeps us open. So I'm comfortable keeping the 15 there because I think that's a good value when you look at where else we stand, and then comfortable with the 5 at the 9. This is getting a little arcane, so I apologize. So, okay, that's my input there. Thanks.
We'll have to go back to that because you covered a lot of ground, but any other comments on that? To my right, Noah.
Yeah, thank you. I'll just go through the same, and I agree on number 1 and number 2. Obviously, 2 is good. It's very important, which is the design and site plan. 3, I see 3, which is understanding the development constraints of the Embarcadero, market knowledge at Morro Bay. I don't see that as important as a 15, so I'm thinking we could reduce that by 5 and transition those points to number 5, which I think is very important, and that's the financial strength and relationships with financing resources and demonstrated ability to finance the proposal. There's this idea that there are a lot of local educational rehabilitation and environmental organizations that may or may not be collaborative in this project. We don't know, but I think that's something that we should try to crack the door open to, and would be a strength if they are working and being involving those organizations as much as they see fit. So my thought would be if we added some language to number 7, which is the overall proposer and team qualifications and experience in similar projects, along with potential collaboration with local educational rehabilitation and environmental organizations, something along those lines. I don't know how you feel about that, but I think that helps us encourage them to reach out and see if some of these other organizations would like to participate in some way to a level that they feel fit. I'm not dictating that necessarily has to be a part of the project or not.
But Nancy? I don't understand how that fits in the point system.
Points? It would be a part of number 7. So you're talking about team qualifications and their experience, and then you're also talking about perhaps partners, additional partners with the project, local partners.
Well, is that something then, Noah, that you could always add, you know, if applicable or something, right?
What?
You can also add, like, if applicable.
Yeah, I definitely don't
like
want to force that.
Like we've done in number 8.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's perfect on number 8 for the AZA, if applicable.
Then if you're done, the only thing as far as points, I'll chime in a little bit on points. Yeah, you know, I agree with 3 and 5. You know, I was looking at just 5 from 3, which is what I think we're all agreeing on that so far, and then just making number 5 15 points and leave the proposed lease terms at 15 points, and then just change the language on number 7. That's the only other option I see, suggestion, to counter your point about the lease terms, because you were suggesting 20 points on the financial strength.
20 points on financial strength, reducing lease terms to 10. My feeling is, without the financial ability to deliver the project, we're looking at something that may not be sustainable or completable, and that's a very important part of this.
And the other part of that is, we'll get what we get, and we'll have to, you know, work that out.
But my thought is, with this methodology, and I'll finish it with this. This is how we should demonstrate where our priorities lie.
Sure. Any other comments on this? I'm easy either way. I mean, so it looks like 3, we would adjust to 10 points. 4, we would adjust to 10 points. And 5, we would adjust to 20.
Perfect.
Cool. All right.
And so we're there.
And then we add a collaboration.
And then the language on 7. What was this? What was the language for 7? Just collaborating with other educational.
Feasible.
Yeah, other educational partners, if feasible.
Okay. Anything else? So we've got editorial selection and points covered. Do we need to repeat the points just to make sure where we're at on that?
I don't need a repeat of the points. I'm clear on that. One question that Councilwoman Johnson, C. Johnson, brought up in terms of prioritizing. I know by numbers, you know, obviously, you know, 20 points obviously becomes pretty important. 5 becomes less. I would intend to put them in descending order from high point to low point. And that kind of makes numbers 1 through 9 to kind of get it prioritized. It was just, there was no design or plan to put them together this way. It's just how it kind of fell together from the old template to what fit in. Because some of the old items in here just disappeared from the old template. So that's just.
So you'll arrange not by the template, but by the
numbers,
numbers of points.
Yes.
Thank
okay.
you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks for clarifying that. So we're clear on all the corrections?
Yes.
Okay. And any other comments on this?
Do we need to move to approve?
We need to move to approve with amended items as
I would move
stated.
I would move to approve C.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. As a little bit of background, in March of 2013, the City of Morro Bay Planning Commission approved a coastal development permit for the upgrade of 25 existing campsites and 2 camp host sites to recreational vehicle hookups, among other improvements at Morro Strand State Campground. After that Planning Commission meeting, 2 appeals were filed on the approval of that, and both appeals raised questions regarding project consistency with the local coastal program. On April of in 2013, the Council denied one of the appeals, but upheld the other appeal and ultimately denied this coastal development permit for this project. However, at the time of denial, the Council urged state parks, the appellants, local residents, and city staff to meet, discuss, and address concerns with the hopes of moving toward some sort of compromise to get this project done. Also discussed at that time was the state park's ability to forego returning to the Morro Bay City Council and appeal the city's decision directly to the California Coastal Commission for a substantial issue determination de novo hearing. State parks did forward their appeal to the California Coastal Commission, and that appeal is scheduled to be heard on Thursday, August 15th. Between April and August, State Parks has continued to work with the appellants, coastal staff, and residents to address concerns. A number of issues have been addressed in the Coastal Commission staff report, and there have been some significant changes to the project, and those are listed in your staff report. That the Coastal Commission is recommending as conditions of approval. There were 2 other issues that the City Council discussed and are included in Resolution Number 43-13 That seem to be of significant importance to the residents and appellants, but are not included in the Coastal Commission recommendations of approval. And those two issues are number of RV sites and fire rings. State parks, as I had indicated, plan to upgrade 25 of the existing campsites and two camp host sites to 27 RV sites. The residents and appellants have asked that number of RV sites be limited to 20. The second issue is in regard to fire rings. Currently, the RV sites all host a fire ring, and the neighbors and appellants have asked for the fire rings to be decreased and or entirely removed from the reconfigured RV sites due to the proximity of residents. Other concerns from the residents that are not addressed in the project, and we also didn't include in the resolution, but you certainly have the ability to do that, is the rehabilitation of the restrooms. State Parks has indicated that those improvements to the restrooms will occur through a consent decree, which requires State Parks to commence construction on the restrooms by July 1st, 2018. At this time, State Parks has indicated to the appellants, the residents, as well as the city, that they don't have the funding to renovate the restrooms at this time. Also of interest was the consideration of a new access way to alleviate the continual degradation of the bluff by handmade paths through the bluff. State Parks has indicated that, again, they don't have funding to install new access ways. However, they will be making improvements to the existing access ways, including directional signage to use the existing access. And lastly, there was some concern regarding coastal erosion, and State Parks has indicated that they will be working with the City of Morro Bay to really look at the issues of coastal erosion. They also have indicated that their proposed project does include some drain systems to hopefully better control that drainage and those issues. What we've done tonight is we've attached a draft resolution for you to review and certainly add and take away as you see fit. What we've done is included the conditions that the California Coastal Commission put on their staff report. They've recommended approval of this project with those conditions. Those are listed in 1 through 8. We've also added a second whereas with the conditions, a couple of other conditions that the residents and appellants seem to be extremely concerned about, and that includes the fire rings and the RV spots. And we're asking for you to amend and approve resolution as you see fit. And staff is also asking for direction on whether or not you're interested in a staff member from the city traveling to Santa Cruz for the Coastal Commission hearing. It would be Thursday, probably late afternoon. I would anticipate it would probably be someone other than the city manager and the public services director, because we do have our water reclamation facility meeting that evening. I'm happy to answer questions, and that concludes my staff report.
Okay, thank you. And any questions for Ms. Luker? To my right, Nancy? None? Janela?
Yeah, just one quick question, actually, to Mr. Lifick, and it's to go over an item that we discussed last time regarding impact fees. That point's been raised a couple of times again, questioning with the additional burden on our water.
State Parks Supervisor Brooke Gutierrez and discussed with her this coming up on the agenda item and the resolution. I did discuss the fire rings at the campsites and discussed other items that were listed in the resolution as it was spelled out, but I just want to disclose that. I don't have any questions, but at this point we can open it up for public comment. Those who wish to speak to items on this please step forward. Do you have 3 minutes?
Good evening, Mayor Adams and Council members. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here tonight representing the Wavingas and the other residents in the neighborhood. At your April 9th council meeting, you encouraged State Parks and the appellants and the neighbors to meet, discuss, and try to resolve some of the concerns that were raised. As you can see by your staff report and my letter that was sent to State Parks, we did in fact meet and were able to resolve some of the issues. At this point, I believe we are down to two major issues, which are the campfire rings and the number of RV spaces, like your staff said. First, the campfire rings are of utmost importance to the neighbors.
This has been an ongoing problem with heavy smoke and foul odors coming from the campfires, mainly due to the prevailing wind direction, which blows all this into the neighborhood. The situation is exacerbated in the summertime due to the numbers of campfires and the foggy and still weather patterns which hold the smoke over their homes. One of the neighbors has provided me with a photo that was taken last week. This will give you an idea, and I would like also to consider that this could be multiplied up to 85 times because of the number of campsites in the park. The neighbors at State Parks have asked State Parks to remove the campfire rings at all the RV spaces within the proposed project and along the toe of the bluff to help alleviate some of this smoke. The neighbors understand that the tent campers sometimes rely on these rings for cooking and heat, but the RV campers are self-equipped and that this is not a necessity. State Parks indicated that they are not supportive of eliminating the campfire rings, and this is all part of the camping experience and needs to continue to offer this. While this may be a fun camping experience, it is time for them to recognize the impacts of the general public health and welfare of the neighbors and the visitors and take a proactive approach. There are several cities in Southern California that are recognizing this issue and have or are currently working on banning campfires, especially in the residential neighborhoods. Just recently, the South Coast Air Quality Management District Board voted to prohibit fire rings within 700 feet of homes. To put this particular situation into perspective, the closest neighbors to this park are only 100 feet away. The second item is the number of RV spaces. The neighbors respectfully requested that State Parks reduce the number of spaces in the inn to 20. The neighbors recognize that a project is being proposed to increase the campground space and use it to provide additional revenue source. Based upon the experience living near the park, the neighbors feel that the overall amenities and the presentation of the park with additional landscaping will draw more campers to the site rather than trying to maximize the number of spaces of RVs. I saw an interesting description in the camp of the campground in the Living Here insert that was in the Tribune on Sunday, and it read, quote, "This is basically a long runway of pavement with few trees, and this campground does not offer much cover." The neighbors feel that if the intent of State Parks is really to increase the revenue stream from this park, it should be about the enhancing quality versus quantity. In conclusion, I would ask for your support and also to send staff up to the meeting because it would be important. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Absolutely. Public comment for any items on this? Anyone wish to speak on this item?
Hello there. I'm Harold Wiebinga. I live at 120 Pin A. I've been here many times, and usually my opening statement is, and I will do it again, Strand State Park stinks. Strand State Park is a pollution park. I'm asking City Council to join us and do something with the Coastal Commission and their desire to pollute the area. I have noticed here on your mission statement on the City Council agenda paper, the City of Morro Bay is dedicated to preservation and enhancement of the quality of life. The quality of life is clean air. San Luis Obispo, through the years that I've known and been to San Luis Obispo, they have done a marvelous job cleaning their air and keeping it clean. I'm asking the City Council of Morro Bay to join us, send somebody to the Coastal Commission this Thursday to represent clean air. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Marla Jobe, that was a bit problematic at the time, and I'm wondering if that's changed or if it's still the same. They're just treated the same as I am at my house as far as impact goes and paying the city for that impact to our services and our conveyance and our treatment. And also now the water is more of a question of, you know, filling these things up. So when the question was posed to Mr. Livek moving forward to Tascadero State Park, I guess I have the same question there. How is that being treated by the city now? Are they considered just another customer in the city as far as their fees go that they pay on their water and sewage bills, because I think that it should be a separate agreement with them. And like Mr. Smuckler was, the point that he was getting to is really an important discussion item, I think, for this, especially since we're in the process of a WRF water reclamation facility project, and that the capacity issues are already in question by some people, and we have to know the capacity before we build. So all of this is important. It adds up. Thank you.
Thank you. Any others for public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council. And at this point, so let me review where we're at on this. And we've been given options or alternatives, and that would be adopt the resolution as presented. The other alternative would be to amend the language in the resolution and adopt, or take no action on the resolution at all. And at this point, if there are any other questions for staff, or we proceed right into discussion, I would lead off with a couple questions for Mr. Livick. And as far as the fires go, what's the order in the city, if we have a campground or a RV park, is there an ordinance that prohibits campfires or fire rings like in downtown in our RV?
No, there isn't an ordinance. In fact, as long as you meet the fire code separation from a combustible structure, so you can have a fire ring in your backyard if you so choose. We allow recreational fires in Morro Bay in the residential district. So the folks on Beachcomber, anybody could have a fire pit in their backyard.
Got it. Okay. Thanks. George, to my left, do you have any discussion or question?
Well, I see that they insist on these fire rings, right? I mean, that's just that's the deal killer we have here with between the folks that live there. Is that it?
If I'm speaking for state parks, their view is fire rings are part of the camping experience. And the neighbors would like a reduction in the number of fires due to the smoke. State Parks did propose, and I believe they've already started doing this, is to provide campfire education to their campers. There isn't really a need for very smoky fires as long as you're burning dry wood. They encourage them to burn dry wood, don't throw garbage into your fires, and that sort of thing, which they've educated.
But nobody's going to police this, right?
It's still pollution.
Yes.
And Coastal Commission staff takes the same position. Just a little bit of history right now in Orange County. There's a big dispute going on between Coastal Commission and the South County Air Quality Control Board. They want to try to eliminate or reduce the campfires in Newport Beach, Huntington Beach, and Seal Beach. And the Coastal Commission has that same position as the state parks, is that they need to be preserved for the visitor-serving community ability to use the beaches. So there's a battle going on right now. It was on the July agenda for Coastal Commission, and they postponed it for the Air Quality Control Board to weigh in as to the actual data on what it does for air quality control.
Seems like there could be an alternative for this fire rings. I mean, I don't know. We still got electricity or so. I can see where this is a real problem out there. I mean, look at that picture up there, you know.
Oh, dear. I'm going to get myself in trouble because I'm terribly conflicted on this one. I love to camp, and I love to have a fire ring. And also, I live right across the street from RV Park, where quite often it's really kind of strange, right downtown Morro Bay. And they'll pull out their camp chairs and their little fire ring and light up their campfire. That's they're camping in an RV park. That's just the way it is. Yet, in a way, I feel for the people who live across the street from there. Yet I have a good friend, at least he used to be a good friend, who lives on Beachcomber, has a beautiful big fire ring that he burns a big fire in on occasion. So, you know, this is kind of a complicated issue. My take on this is the education that you burn dry wood. Maybe the state could provide dry wood at a less expensive cost. I know it's pretty expensive. And the other thing that I've seen done, for example, in Yosemite Valley, you are not allowed to build a fire until a certain time in the evening, which I understand precludes campers from using it to warm themselves or cook over an open fire during the day or in the morning. But it does help solve some of the pollution problems in the valley there. So I think there are solutions that can meet the needs of both groups. But I think we need to go back to education. And while I understand there probably are not enough rangers in that park to manage this, maybe with some phone calls, that, you know, if people are burning garbage or other stuff, that might help. And I don't know. As a camper, I think people need their campfires, but I also understand you may not want to live across the street from one.
Noah?
Thank you. I'll keep my comments to the fire, and then I have some other items that I'd like to propose.
Hold your feet to the fire on that one.
Yeah. I'm a fan of having a campfire as well, and yet in this case, because of the proximity to the neighborhood, I think there's a good point there, and there are other places, as Mr. Leek pointed out, for people to have a fire and enjoy that camping experience. My thought would be, it doesn't sound like Coastal is going to be very sympathetic on this, but I think the trend's going away from allowing this, particularly in this sort of a proximity to a neighborhood, and it wouldn't hurt for us to have an inclusion, as suggested there, that my thought would be to limit campfires to non-RV sites, non-hookup sites at a minimum, because you have all of those resources available to you with electrical and so on, and the facilities to prepare food and not have a fire. Plus, there's less space because of the RV, so it creates just a reduction there. And those RV spaces, as they've designed it, are closer to the neighborhood. Not that that's going to make that much of a difference. So that would be my comment on the campfire.
I'll just bring to everybody's attention. So in the resolution, the way it reads is on that last the last whereas. There's three items there that are added to the resolution that address the fire rings, and the one is reduction of the number of fire rings at the RV sites to every other site. That would be a suggestion in this resolution to Coastal Commission. Or number two, removal of the fire rings at the RV sites, as you suggested. Three, reduction of the number of converted RV spots from proposed 27 to 20. So that's in there. You know, I brought this conversation up with Brooke Kateris from State Parks as well, and the discussion was similar to what we're having now. I mean, it is unique. We have a campground in that close proximity to a neighborhood. It's pretty unique. Not too many like it in California. And so the byproduct of the campfires is, you know, I think it's, I think everybody's out there is echoing their concern or the fallout, if you will, of the fire. I guess the only other suggestion in there, because it's really in there, requesting the Coastal Commission to consider one of those options, and that would be to or consider reduction of the size of the fire rings and in an effort to reduce the size of the fire, if that would at all help. Other than that, I think everything in the resolution is covered, and you know, there, and then it goes back to alternative number one, adopt the resolution as presented, unless there was some language in there that we wanted to add or
something along the lines of enhanced public access from Beachcomber and designated corridors through the park. Currently, I don't read in the proposal anything that helps protect that, and as the state parks has suggested, what the existing official stairways are sufficient and people can walk to those, but as is pointed out from Mr. Arbach's letter and others in the neighborhood, that can be up to a quarter mile depending on where you can park, and on busy weekends Beachcomber can be filled with some overflow parking from the campsites and then day use parking. It's a popular place, and if we're successful in increasing its popularity, which I think we all hope will be the case, then you're going to see even more impacts there. And I'm reading in the state parks proposal that they're going to be reducing the informal pathways that exist now that have been created over time. So my feeling is let's enhance the Beachcomber public access and designate corridors so we don't end up with a wall of RVs that are intimidating and create it's an uninviting area for people to try to get to the beach from Beachcomber through, whether it's neighbors or day visitors. So that's one. The second would be expanded day use parking beyond what's proposed. I think that's very important because just in my observations, I spend a fair amount of time there, and on your standard busy weekends, currently first thing in the morning before there's a lot of extra day use traffic, there are times when Beachcomber is almost full, or I counted 30 cars there first thing in the morning, and maybe two or three of those were surfers and the rest were related to overflow from the campsites. You could see the relation from those parked cars to the sites, and I think that's a problem because that's a burden that is going to fall back on the city for us to enforce, and we're creating a scenario, even with those six additionals that they're proposing, where we're going to be running into problems. And my feeling would be let's ask them to expand the day use parking beyond what is proposed. The third, this may be something that Coastal will disregard and feel satisfied on, but require a timeline for the amenities to be improved, such as the restroom remodel and the showers, along with, I think this is part of the amenities and the comfort level of the park, is the interior landscape screening. All of those things, to me, if I was managing that park, would be the first place I would go rather than these hookups. It's a disagreement I have with how their management approach is going, but each of those items makes it a much more enhanced park and a much more attractive park for people to stay. I think that's one of the main issues why you don't see it as popular as it could be. Number four would be preservation and designation of tent/motorcycle, bicycle, hiking, car camping sites. I understand that state parks would be required, if they want to expand the hookups in the future, would be required to probably open this process back up. But I'm not assured at this point that there's any intent of preserving and designating traditional tent/car camping sites. And I'm seeing an increase in popularity of bicycle, motorcycle, car camping, and we want to make sure that that opportunity is preserved at this park. The next one, number five, is a coastal bluff erosion control plan. I know their state parks is committing to that to a certain degree, but I just want to make sure that that's a requirement. I think it's very important. You look at the slumping that's going on Beachcomber itself and below on the bluffs. You can only imagine with additional work there's going to be additional potential for slumping, and that's a problem for a lot of different reasons. The third would be ensure a viewshed protection plan.
I thought you were on number six.
Excuse me.
You just completed five.
I'm getting behind myself.
Yeah.
We have phasing the landscape and view shed enhancement work as part of the commitments, but I want to ensure that there's a protection plan for that view shed, which is priceless, and something that we all want to make sure we continue to enjoy, whether it's day users or the residents or people walking through that area. So then the last one was six, was the campfires. Or seven, yes, thank you. Getting a little turned around here.
So number seven, we can just, we've got it in there. All we have to do is strike number one on the resolution that's...
Profile vehicles allowed on Beachcomber.
Or overnight. Right.
Allowed it, period.
Yeah.
At all.
Or overnight parking as well. Am I correct on that?
Oh, I don't believe there's a restriction on overnight parking.
No, there is not.
So...
For RVs, RVs aren't allowed at any time.
So now we're getting into city parking, and we're not really with the resolution. So let's get back to that.
My feeling is let's include these items. I think they're important, and obviously Coastal's going to make their own determinations. State, these are fairly open ended. Expanded day use parking, for example. It leaves it open to state parks to work out the plan within the park, not depending on overflow to our streets and neighborhoods, just as an example. And I think the others are fairly open-ended as well. And none would significantly require major change of their plan. It's in a way holding them accountable to what they're going forward with. Part of me is not in favor of this proposal at all. I think Mr. Arbach has some good points in his proposal of that we received a better plan for the campgrounds. I think that's a really interesting idea. I think it's not something that we're going to get traction on at Coastal, but perhaps by including these and sending a representative, we will receive some additional conditions that would help make this a better plan.
So if we were to include all these, which I agree it's a good addition, on the resolution on the first page where we basically have eight items listed under the whereas since the city's denial and in response to the substantial issues identified, goes on to say State Parks has proposed several changes to the original project, which include to include this list of six, could we include something to the effect of, and I guess basically we need to make another whereas there for this list of
Mayor,
six
actually,
items.
I think you already have it. You have whereas there were also additional issues raised by the appellants and neighbors that were not addressed by the Coastal Commission's conditions of approval of the project, but that the City of Morro Bay believes are important and requests the following should be added.
And then we can just include that list in there?
We could, and if before you finish up, I'd like to just go over the list
that
I think you have to make sure that we've got the wording when you're ready for that.
Okay. I think that's a good spot for it, and if you're ready to go through that list, we can do that right now.
Okay, thank you, and I totally agree that's a good place to add them. So the first was, and this is...
I think the first one is we're going to, number one, we're going to line out.
Yes. Okay. Let's work off of that existing list and then build from it. So
I'm happy to provide what I took in notes.
Sure.
If that's going to work for you.
Yeah.
I've got the first two, removal of fire rings at the RV sites. I've got the second, reduction of the number of converted RV spots from the proposed 27 to 20. And then we go into the list that Councilmember Smuckler provided, and enhanced public access from Beachcomber and provide designated corridors.
For public access?
Enhanced public access from Beachcomber and provide designated corridors for public public access.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
Designated corridors through park.
Through the park. Enhanced public access from Beachcomber and provide designated corridors through the park. Expanded day use parking. Required.
Let me just ask. Expanded day use parking beyond the
proposal.
Beyond the proposal.
require a timeline for improvements of the restroom, showers, and interior landscape screening.
And include interior landscape screening.
And include. I changed your number four a little bit to just preservation of non-RV sites. Is that working for the council?
Yeah, preservation and designation maybe. I would see a time where the state's going to want to include additional RV hookups, and if there's a percentage that's designated or a certain number of sites that are.
Okay. Preservation and designation of non-RV sites. Preparation of a coastal erosion bluff plan.
Yeah, and can I ask Mr. Livick if you think we should push for some form of approval through the city, or what would you think be the most effective way to try to make sure that gets done?
Well, that would be a building permit, and I don't believe that the state parks is subject to a building permit approval from the city. They would go through the Office of the State Architect for all their building plans submittals. So they're having their building plans reviewed by a superior government agency also.
So you think the language as it's stated will
yes
get us there? Okay.
And then the last one that I have is preparation of a view shed protection program.
Or a plan.
Plan.
And, or I had ensure was the word I had, because they speak to that here in this first whereas. First whereas in phasing the landscape and view shed enhancement work.
So ensure a view shed protection plan?
Yeah.
Okay. And those will all go under that last whereas.
Perfect.
Thanks for humoring me.
So do I have a motion to approve Resolution 4313 as amended? So we're good on that? Okay. Okay, that completes item C2. Moving on to item C3, review and discussion of co-sponsorship of special events. And we have,
I have
Ms.
a question.
Johnson coming back.
And this Ms. Johnson wants to know if I need to excuse myself because I'm the chair of one of the events that's already exempt and co-sponsored.
Do you in any way receive a stipend or a financial benefit from being
You're
on the
kidding,
board?
Right? No.
Then no, you would not have a financial benefit.
You Thank
can,
you.
You can hear the item.
Okay, so moving on. Review and discussion of co-sponsorship of special events. Mr. Woods.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. This item regarding co-sponsorships of special events was reviewed back in 2009. We went through several formal discussions. Also went to the Recreation Parks Commission for their review. Those recommendations were forwarded to City Council, and in October the 12th, 2009, Council adopted a policy that conditioned co-sponsorships of special events. And those were three items. The group needed to be nonprofit. They also needed to have a multiple day or a one day event with the financial return to the city, and the third being that the event being held off peak or off season, which would be November the 1st through April the 30th. This co-sponsorship policy was set up to benefit local economy by providing incentives for nonprofit groups to have their programs in the off season and having multiple days, thus increasing the TOT and also sales tax, which would be a benefit to the city based on the size of the particular event. Events not meeting those three criteria were not considered for co-sponsorship. Staff has provided you with some suggestions if you'd like to increase and expand the criteria for co-sponsorships. And those are listed 1 through 6 on the expanded criteria. And these are some items that had been brought forth through previous discussions with council as well as also with the Recreation Parks Commission. And those six would be the date of the event. And this, again, is still the off-season. We also included city holidays on this list. The second would be the nonprofit status, third multiple-day event, and the fourth being that the event aligns with the department and the city's mission statements. And we've stated those on the application. So as I finish this report, I will have the introduction of the application. It's in draft form, and staff has taken council's direction and added a few items onto that application, as well as number five, event advertising that includes outside advertisement outside of the county, and the event would be alcohol-free, that would be sales or consumption. The suggestion would be that we have a level of benefits that would be tied to the number of criteria which were met by the event, and those are the six criteria that I had mentioned. Based on those criteria being met, the event would be privy to either a lowest permitting fee, but would pay for city support services. They would, number two would be to waive those permitting fees, but still include the city support services. And the fourth, or the third, being that the permitting fees and the city support services were waived. And in the box in your staff report, you'll see that there's a recommended city co-sponsorship policy. So items in the criteria one through four being met, they would receive the lowest permitting fee, but still would support pay for support services. If they had all four plus the number five, which means that they were advertising outside the county and bringing people in for multiple days, off season, nonprofit, so forth, they would have their permitting fees waived, but still would be responsible for city support services. And if all six of the criteria were met, then it would be basically a waiver of fees and support services. So in essence, the council will be saying that they're fully supportive of an event that was meeting all six criteria. We're seeing that the benefit outweighs the resources that we're allocating, and those benefits, whether they're indirect economic impact, whether benefit to quality of life, or a combination of it helps us to make sure that we're fair and equitable to all that apply, and that we are meeting the needs of the community based on our mission statements and our goals. The application process, if it's approved tonight by council, would be included as one part of a larger partnership policy, and we've talked about those policies before. The partnership policy, including variety of different elements within it. That policy is has been introduced to the RPC at their May meeting, and would be scheduled for a further review in their upcoming meeting. This concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions that might be pertaining to the criteria, as well as the draft application that's also attached to your staff report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Woods. With that, we'll bring it back to council for questions. I'll look to my right. Nancy?
Yeah.
Oh.
I really don't have any questions.
I don't have any questions at this point. I'll have some comments later.
Noah?
Yeah, just a quick question. To take the 4th of July, for example, here with the proposal, they wouldn't qualify currently as they've designed it because of the multi-day event requirement criteria. Am I correct on that?
If it was a review on their program they just had, you'd be correct. They would have five out of the six, that one being not a multiple day.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to confirm that.
You okay there? Good. Okay. George? Christine?
It's kind of a general question, and it may be something we discussed, so I'll just ask it now, and maybe it's better for us to talk about. But last meeting, I think, we agendized aid to agencies. So just this is just kind of a random question to Mr. Woods,
yeah.
And I don't know if I'll ask the question and we can, you know, get staff input on whether or not we can discuss that, but I'm wondering if he sees this as linked to that in any way or no, and perhaps the city manager would want to weigh in on that too.
Yes and no. I think that the list of eight other agencies goes beyond the special event providers. And so there are agencies out there that that have benefited from eight agencies. So I don't think it would be directly, but there are parts in there that this could be folded into if you wanted to look at supporting those. My witness is a selection process, and there are quite a few folks that have requested, and so there may be a longer list, a list that may exhaust your available resources, and there will be denials of some of the applicants, and it may be based on just the sheer amount of available resources. So I think that has some complications when you try to blend the two, if that was council's purview to do.
That was my only question at the moment.
Okay. A couple questions for me. On the so I spoke to our followed up on our chamber event where we had a special events meeting. And basically we were supposed to get information on that. Hey, you know, we're having a special event meeting. What kind of information will we get back from that as far as the need for this co-sponsorship? And to my understanding, we really didn't get anything back from that. And you know, originally this came to us, I don't get to my question here, but originally this came to us because we had a pretty brief co-sponsorship policy with 4th of July applying, and it didn't meet that. And really there was no reason to approve it based on our the existing policy. So here we are looking to expand this. And so we went ahead and funded the 4th of July committee at our budget hearing that didn't have anything to do with this policy per se. So I guess we're looking at the expanding this even further, and my question is, what are the indicators that we need to expand this? If we had in a special event meeting and there was no feedback on that, and we only have two events as it is now that use this, and I guess that's my first question.
Well, I would respond, Mr. Mayor, that it's expanded based on some of the testimonies and requests that we've been receiving in public comment from other programs that are looking for us to subsidize, if you will, the city support services.
Mm-hmm. And Parks Project.
Yes, it is.
And how about the Thanksgiving dinner? Is that a co-sponsored type event?
That's put on by the Morro Bay Police Officers Association, the POA, as well as the Rotary.
So internal events, basically, you know, there's no that's not part of the equation if it's an internal type of event, is what you're saying.
If it's an internal use request, then there are no fees, and city resources are allocated pursuant to that particular department head's available resources and city manager's support.
Okay. Those are all the questions I have. We don't have anybody in the audience, but this would be the time to open it up for public comment. And since we don't have any, I'll bring it back to council for discussion. And I'll look to my left. George, do you have anything for discussion? Christine?
I think that this, as I reviewed the minutes from the last discussion, I mean, yes, it's would be wonderful to fund everybody. And I think we had two very valid events mentioned this evening, the car show and the Harbor Festival, that do absolutely, you know, enhance our town in many ways. One of them is economic, and it's hard to, a little hair or something there. So it's hard to say whether or not at this point that they're direct. I mean, it's hard to pin down the number exactly what does each person who attends the car show, exactly what does each person who attends the 4th of July of the Harbor Festival, how do they impact, you know, our sales tax, for example. It's difficult to find those numbers. So it's going to be hard for us as a city to be able to say, okay, well then we need to have hard data on how we fund events in general. I think it would be nice for us to be able to meet everyone's needs. That's just completely unrealistic. So my question for this conversation is, do we want to bring this back in a package with aid to agencies and then think about overall what kind of a budget, I mean, because it really is a budgetary item. When we were flush, these things got funded. And when we were flush in the city, you didn't have to parse out how much it would cost to have somebody direct direct traffic for you. That was just kind of all part of it. So it breaks down to me to a budgetary issue, and then once it's just like all other budgetary issues, it's a priority issue. So for example, this year, this council made a priority issue for an event on the 4th of July. So that's how we decided that. That wasn't through a process in any other way. It was just budgetary.
Right.
So because we have agendized aid to agencies and an agency, because I wasn't here when we had that kind of discretion in our budget, could an agency also be an event planning group? Were you ever, or was it strictly a more like social, I guess, did you ever have an event where an event planning was considered an aid to agency? Like, would the Harbor Festival be an agency, or would another 501c3 be coming to ask for money during that process?
In the past, no. But if we were to expand the aid to agencies and have an application process, we could certainly do that with an allocated amount of, you know, $30,000, and it goes, and there's that discussion that you have, and, you know, $5,000 goes to EVC and $5,000 goes to 4th of July. So you could wrap it in there. We haven't done that in the past. But it's certainly an option.
And I bring it up because I'm thinking about overall the way we're funding agencies or events, and all of the agencies that are doing events for us are 501c3s. So they fall into the same category as, you know, us, a nonprofit that's giving some, you know, direct service to someone in a different way. So I'm wondering if we don't want to, you know, appreciate the work that's been done tonight and bring this back with the item that talks about aid to agencies, perhaps, and then look at it from that perspective overall, big picture. Because it's really hard. And then at some point we might want to have the discussion about, because it keeps coming up, is the 4th of July an event that we want to say, okay, it's in the middle of our tourism season in the summer. Many of our businesses rely on it. Is it something that we make a budget line item for, or every year we know if we have funds, we will do this with the funds? You know, not that we would give them direct money for the fireworks, but that we would take over some of the, or just eat some of the cost, really. So we might want to have that kind of discussion. Is there any event that we feel that way about? And if there aren't, then I would suggest coming back with the aid to agencies report, looking at this again at that time, and then kind of coming up with an overall policy if we so choose. It may be that, as the mayor said, we don't change the event policy as it stands, and then we just look at the other requests that come through at the budget time. But then it gets to be unwieldy. But then again, we did have people who stood up and asked for money, and some of them got it. So I'm a little convoluted in my thought, but I don't really want to get too deep into this without the aid to agencies.
An hourly rate. If the event then meets five of the criteria, they would be waived the permitting fees and require city support services still on an hourly basis. Then the last one is the one that kind of bothers me, because I think even if you meet all six criteria and you have an event that is requiring, say, police officers, for an example, or the fire department to be there available, I don't think we should waive those city support services. So I think that you would get the benefit of waived permitting fees and an hourly rate for city support services, but I don't think we can give city support services away for free. But this, to me, says, yes, it meets the needs of our events that are held during the summer that are a great benefit to us. I like the six things that are listed here, and it gives you a little leeway, you know, if you don't meet all six. But I would like to move forward with this recommended policy, sponsorship policy, with a couple of amendments if anybody else is interested.
Noah?
Thank you. That would be an interesting approach, what you just proposed, Nancy. I think in that scenario, we could work with what's existing with the adjustments you proposed, and then for, say, the future discussion of aid to agencies, that's, if we go there, that could be where the difference could be made up in special circumstances, like with the 4th of July, for instance.
Could you explain to me how the aid to agencies fits into this, especially in terms of 4th of July? Because I'm confused about the term and how it fits into our co-sponsorship policy.
Well, just let me confirm for Mr. Woods. For the package and the relationship we just had with the 4th of July, we did waive the costs. We didn't receive compensation for the baseline hourly rates for the police and fire involvement. Am I correct on that?
No, you're not correct.
We did assess them.
It was basically the permitting and the city support services were all intact, as they would be, as well as the insurance requirement. Your allocation of resources to this group was outside of our permitting, and so if they used those resources to pay for an invoiced amount, then it came from the city back to the city. But the fees were not waived. The costs for city support services were not waived, nor was the insurance requirement.
Well, the costs were assessed, but we gave them those costs through our allocation of funds. Am I correct on that?
Okay.
We covered the police and fire support. They did not have to pay for that out of pocket.
I think we are talking a little bit of semantics. So the city council funded the 4th of July $4,000.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they were still invoiced and paid for their fees. They likely used that $4,000 for those fees, or perhaps they didn't use the money we gave them, but they used the $4,000 for the fireworks. But all in all, generally their fees for city support services were about $4,000. So
yeah.
Is that clear?
That is. So
okay.
That gets to my point where that third level that you're suggesting we drop, which is the associated benefit would be waived permitting fees and waived city support services, which is a serious proposition. It's not something we want to make available to. It's a very special situation for that sort of a proposition. And yet I personally felt like in the 4th of July case that was warranted. So I guess I'd be a little concerned that if we drop that altogether, we're creating a situation where then we'd have to, if we want to, figure out a way to help the 4th of July get to that next step. And that would be perhaps through an aid to agencies type of a program.
I think our problem here is using just the 4th of July as an example. We also have the car show that is spoken up. We have the Harbor Festival, which is spoken up. Those are two agencies, or 501c3s, whatever you want to call them, who use police services and fire services to help support their event. I think no matter what the event is, if we're using those services, they need to be paid for.
Small, by having a 4th of July come up, and this is kind of expanded to what it is now. I can appreciate your comments, Nancy, on these other two recommendations here. But the more we talk about that, it seems to be creating a formula to where basically, you know, everybody on this list of 35 is available to apply for this, and that's what we're going to do. And, you know, in our fiscal impact report, it doesn't really tell us what we're looking at. And I'm just hesitant to that. I'm not ready to go there. I think we need to. And as far as the aid to agency part of that goes, And I will, you know, I'll ask Ms. Luker here about that, because my understanding was the aid to agency was an agency that was looking for funding. It could have been the senior center or something like that. It wasn't necessarily an event, but it was an agency. And so that's where that stemmed from. But I'll look for Ms. Luker to respond to that.
That's certainly how it was. It was different agencies looking for funding for different sorts of programs. I think what we had just indicated that it could certainly be expanded through an application process for any sort of event that you wanted to do. So it wasn't that, but it could be expanded to include that and maybe meet the needs, because you're still talking about a limited number of dollars that you have to provide for those types of things. So it wasn't, but it could be. It's really up to the council.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind if I say something really quick?
Yeah.
I think what you just said is makes a lot of sense. And let's take a little more time to think about this in the big picture that was mentioned. And I think, too, there were some interesting ideas that I've heard from the Tourism Bureau Director regarding her thoughts on how a marketing and promotion plan working through her department could help the city and events identify additional sponsorship funding opportunities to get there in bringing some additional revenue in and helping to cover some of these costs. So I think if we extend this, let's ask Mr. Woods to sit down with Ms. Moss and look at some options there and see if there's something that could also help overall in this discussion.
Go ahead, Nancy.
While I would like to move on with this tonight, I can understand Noah's position here. My suggestion would be that if we bring this back, we bring it back as a public hearing item and do it earlier in the evening so that we have these organizations, groups that are interested here rather than at 10 o'clock at night when everyone's gone home.
Anybody else? Did you have any more comments?
I just think that I would like to comment that the current, if someone meets all the criteria, that's nearly every event we have. So I don't think that would break the bank, wouldn't it? I mean, reality is, if you are doing, it's close, not to all, but it's close that we could be increasing what we're giving out in this area. Could that be that we're giving out $50,000 at some point?
Currently, I mean, you'd be set up for what we had illustrated in previous staff reports, which is close to $18,000. There would be a chance that would increase if these criteria were put in place. The Winter Bird Festival does hit on a holiday, so that would, and they're alcohol free, so they may go into the 6 for $6 category. And then be requesting that we that they don't pay for direct costs for staff or facility use, so there may be additional revenues lost there. However, those revenues lost on one stream may be realized in another in an indirect impact. We know that that's really a tough indicator to illustrate. However, we do know that a waiver of fees and a waiver of city support services is going to be a reduction in revenues directly. And when we build sustainable budgets at the beginning of the year, we try to take that in consideration. And right now, the list of events you have before you, as accurate as it may be, there are two or three that I pointed out, as I'm just going through it, that have decided not to do their event this year. So that would impact us one way or another after the budget's been set up. So there are definitely fiscal impacts that you'll be looking at, particularly if there's waiver of fees that would decrease our abilities to bring in revenues that were projected.
So then just to follow up, I think that I'd like to comment that I think that Chief Christie is really doing a great job in paring down what the necessities are.
Some earlier in this process, but we'd be happy to do that again for whatever length, if you want a full year, fiscal year, or just a particular season, that's fine.
So, any more? So with that, we to move forward on this, a financial analysis is basically on what these events are, what the impact of all these events would be if we were incurred that cost, I think is what you're getting at.
I'm wondering if with the, especially if we do something where if you meet 4 out of 6 or 5 out of 6 of these requirements, then you would become more likely for co-sponsorship. Right now it's difficult to get co-sponsorship for many events. But if we increase the opportunity, would we end up making people more eligible, and then are we prepared to fund that? That's my question.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is okay to make more people eligible as long as we don't waive the fees that cost us money. For example, the baseline fees, you know, the hourly, if there's an hourly rate for setting up for an event, if there's an hourly rate for police and fire, no matter whether you're co-sponsored or not, you still pay that event, that rate. So that's not going to impact the city fiscally other than, I don't know how it does, actually.
Mayor?
That's, yes.
I think what you may be looking for is if we had a co-sponsorship policy and how events met that policy. We have an existing policy, and we can certainly bring back to you, and I think we did, it probably was in a little bit of a different form. If you met these criteria, this is what would be waived, and this is the impact to the city. So truly we have waived, or some, if they met all the criteria, you would waive your police, your fire, those kinds of costs, and we can bring back those figures. That's really the fiscal impact that we can provide to you, but it's going to be provided based on a set of criteria, either the existing criteria or the new criteria that Mr. Woods has been provided. But we have to have some sort of basis to start with that, and we can certainly start with the, you know, existing criteria.
Yeah, I think we should look at both to compare.
To what we've done and tonight what we've provided.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be events that we've obviously only done in the past, events that have happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. The last item in the box, Nancy, that you were talking about, it's we have recommended co-sponsorship policy. There's two sentences there. The last one was if you meet all three, you waive permitting fees except for the support services. Really, that one can be limited because there's only two that are applying for what you were saying.
Right. So we're talking about the last one in the box.
Yes.
If you meet all six.
Yeah.
Right. And see, by waiving support fees, that's going to be the major fiscal impact.
So realistically, there's only two items, the first two items in that box that we're interested in.
Right.
And to come back with the existing policy and these two proposals.
And if we come back in a public hearing format and at an earlier hour,
I would
highly recommend that.
Okay.
Can I affirm that request that
sure.
Mr. Woods sits down with Ms. Moss and explores some ideas about sponsorship packaging?
Yeah, that'd be good too. So we don't have to make a motion on that, but we do have, you have an idea of what we're, Ms. Luker, we were talking about the two comparisons.
I do.
Okay. And Joe has information to connect with Karen and that.
I certainly do. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Okay. No motion, no actions taken on that item. We can move on to item C4, and that would be the water reclamation facility. Andrea Luker, report.
Thank you. Thanks. Once again, good evening, Mayor and Council. This is just an report to provide to you the latest work that we've done concerning the water reclamation facility. Just quickly, we did have a great quarterly meeting with the Coastal Commission back in mid-July. We had the Rickenbach team there to participate in the review and discussion to just bring the Coastal Commission staff up to date on the water reclamation facility project. We did also receive the report entitled Conceptual Wastewater Treatment Alternatives Technical Memorandum that was commissioned by the Cayuga Sanitary District. It is on their website. We also provided a copy to you, Council, on that WSC report. That certainly is, I'm in groups and talking about specific items concerning the water reclamation facility. We'll also be doing a site location exercise. Then the Rickenbach team will be summarizing. So it's an exciting evening, and we really encourage people to attend. I was pleased to see that the Tribune had a small article on the front page of the paper on Monday regarding our project, as well as indications of our community workshop. A couple of things that are coming up. We are scheduled for a biosolids and treatment option workshop. Tentatively, I'm going to say tentatively, but I think Mr. Levick has confirmed that for September 16th. October 15th is looking like our second community workshop, and we're anticipating on the 22nd of October a presentation to you, the City Council, of options. So I'm pleased with the progress that we've made, excited about the first workshop, and we really encourage the public to attend. And I think the council members have done a great job of getting the word out concerning that workshop. I'm happy to answer questions that you have on this report.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Luker? None to the left. Any to the right?
Will the names of the stakeholders be revealed Thursday night, or do we know who they are?
The interviewers and their comments will not be, like I went back and forth with this, they will not be linked.
Will not associate
Okay. The
comments made with the interviewees, but I don't think the people that participated in the...
Happy to provide that.
Can we provide that.
Sure.
As part as who participated in the workshop. I don't know that there's any secret about who participated.
We took the lead from the Rickenbach team on the comments and associating those with the people that were interviewed, and they felt strongly, based on their vast experience with these types of interviews, that it's best to leave the comments anonymous, but they will be provided.
Cool. Anything down there, Noah?
Just besides the short presentation, I'd like to provide.
Well, since there's no more questions, I will recognize that there's no people in the audience, so we won't open it up for public comment, and we'll bring it back to council for discussion. And at this time, I think Noah has a little presentation on this.
Yes.
So turn it over.
So if you don't mind, AGP switching to the slideshow so folks at home can see it, I recently attended a family reunion down in Southern California at Santee Lakes, which is east of San Diego, and did some research leading up to it regarding what they've created as a recreation preserve based off of their wastewater treatment and water recycling system. And I just want to give a quick review of it and then end with a couple of comments. And it's an award-winning system. They developed it in the 1960s, and it was due to a need to treat their wastewater, but also recognizing the water crunch that was coming. The area is very parched and was becoming even more so because of the water use from San Diego. There's about 100,000 people that this area services, obviously bigger than what we're looking for. But I think it's an interesting case study about what a community can do with good planning and then implementing that plan, phasing in the different levels over time. So they treat about 2 million gallons a day, which is, you know, obviously twice as much as what we're currently averaging. And that's to advanced tertiary treatment, Title 22. About 1 million gallons of that treatment ends up being utilized for irrigation in the community, which includes farms, parks, golf courses, and then actually recharging the aquifer as that water trickles through the soil, as well as industrial uses. And then the second half of that 1 million gallons, another 1 million gallons, is utilized to create the Santee Lakes Recreation Preserve. And their philosophy with that preserve is recreation, restoration, and reinvestment. And I think it's a pretty interesting example of combining a bunch of different opportunities and benefits for both the community and tourists, and that includes camping, day use, event facilities, playgrounds, and the swimming pool, which was a groundbreaking idea back at that time and took a lot of work to actually get the permits to be able to do. There's boating, walking, bicycle, dog trails, and, of course, wildlife and bird watching. Here's just some pictures that I took of the seven lakes that they have that basically starts with their wastewater treatment system, follows down through the campground, and then ultimately through a series of these seven lakes to their dam and then to a golf course. So there's a family fishing. You can see the lakes and some islands there, some of the pathways. There's a visitor day use type facility. They had numerous ones of these around. Area is the first area of discharge for that 1 million gallons for the lakes. It runs through the campground. They have it signed, you know, requesting people to avoid contact, but it's Title 22, so all of this has been approved by the various agencies that would require it. I was surprised to see this, though. You're not technically allowed to swim in the lakes because of that. Another just side point that was kind of interesting is there are volunteers that do most of the maintenance in the parks and campgrounds, including cleaning the restrooms and so on. This particular gentleman is a retired CEO. He had a company that included 50 employees. He grew up in San Diego, thought Santee was just an armpit for most of that time. He retired and started traveling the world and got bored and recognized Santee and the campground there as a place to go and enjoy a good quality of life and give back to the community. And now he's there year-round volunteering. The other interesting thing that I thought was something to just keep in mind was they have solar panel systems set up for 50% of the energy use for the park itself. And underneath it, they stacked the benefit of storing RVs, and that's an RV storage units with the solar panels on top, and they get additional revenue off of that. And this generally, winding down here, is just an example of what a community did with good planning, creating multiple benefits that they identified, and those include the functional wastewater treatment system. They're supporting their local water supply. It's a popular recreation area for locals and tourists, habitat and green belt restoration and preservation. They do many educational tours and general public awareness about what their system can do and how to best treat their sewer lines and so on. And then, of course, there's additional revenue generation out of it. So anyone that's interested in learning more could go to either of those websites, SanteeLakes.com or PadreDam.org. And I'm just presenting this not to say that this is what we should do, but leading to the last slide, which, if you don't mind going to, AGP, is our community workshop that's coming up in this process that we've embarked on, which is really our opportunity and chance to ask ourselves what values do we have, where do we want to see our system end up and ultimate plan end up 30, 40, 50 years from now, which we all recognize will be depending on this ultimate system to serve us for. So this workshop coming up this Thursday is one additional opportunity for you to get involved and help us work through these options and determine our own values. So I thought this was just a nice little
warmer upper.
Appetite. Appetite generator for the bigger conversation that we want to have here locally. So thanks for letting me do that. I think I kept that under 6 minutes, maybe.
Wow, nice job.
Kind of flew through that.
That was briefer than some of your comments.
Yeah, you got to maybe let me do this more often.
Yeah.
So that's it, and I just have a couple of real simple handouts for each of the council members and two of our staffers with some more details. So thanks for that.
For doing that, Noah. Is there any comments from council? None? Great. And that concludes item C4, and we can move on to item D1, review of city-owned parking lot located adjacent to the Dynegy power plant and discussion of parking options and future uses, and that would be Mr. Livick.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. This item really is sets up a couple of bookends for what could happen with the parking lot. We have the existing parking lot there, which is a graveled area on a piece of M2 zone property that allows an interim use as public parking, to fully developing the parking to a paved public parking lot, meeting all the city's parking and driveway standards, and spending about $1 million to do that. I just want to point out that actually on my lunchtime run, I ran around the perimeter of this parking lot, and something that as we move forward with whatever we're going to do with this lot, we should consider, which I didn't do on the sketch that I did, is how the future bike path that may end up going through Dynergy would traverse this area. So that needs to be considered, because my layout doesn't really accommodate a bike path coming through there. So when I did my cost estimate, I may have had my little engineer hat on a little too tight, because it's it's all rectangles to each other. And in a large event, allowing people to exit in any direction there would set up for traffic conflicts there, and we wouldn't want to have that happen. So, whatever we do, we should look at either permanent or temporary closures to one of those driveways, and accommodating. Which I think it'd be fairly simple to do, accommodating the traffic through one driveway. So I guess in summary, it's a 3-acre parcel. We can fit about 181 parking spaces on there, fully developed out, striped, meet the landscape stormwater requirements, one end of the scale, or we can leave it as is with some minor improvements and allow it to be as a temporary interim use until we determine what we do with that entire area. Want to point out that it is within the parking in lieu district, so parking in lieu funds could be used on that. We have quite a variety of parking in lieu maps, and I had a question from a council person about whether the Rock parking lot is within the parking in lieu area, and one of our maps does show that, but I seem to recall a map that was attached to a resolution that adopted that didn't go that far out, so that's going to require further research to determine where our parking in lieu area currently is, with especially in these outlying areas, because we have several parking in lieu maps with different boundary on them. That concludes my report, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Mr. Livick. And with that, are there any questions from staff, from council for staff? Off to my left, George. Christine?
I would just like a question that maybe the public might be asking when they hear us talk about paving a parking lot versus paving a street. So if you could just clarify for the public that the parking in lieu fees, please describe what those funds can be used for and what they cannot be used for in terms of street repair.
Parking in lieu funds can be used for improvements within that parking in lieu district for parking purposes only, not for street repairs. Currently, we have about $400,000 in that account that can be used for those parking improvements within that district. It's not intended for street paving money, nor is street paving money intended to be used for public parking lots. They're outside of the traveled way, so we don't really mix those two funds.
Okay, I think it's an important clarification to make if we're talking about paving anything, that we just clarify for the public where those funds come from. And then it was my question about the Rock parking lot, and if we're going to prioritize parking lots, I was curious about if this same $400,000 or so would be where it would be best spent, and if we if it was allowable to spend at the Rock, I think we would want to discuss that.
I believe it's outside of the parking area, but maybe Rob can remember.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, Nancy?
Well, obviously, we don't have $1 million to fix this parking lot, plus we don't know where the bike path is going. So, in the meantime, what about some more appropriate signage? I mean, or bigger signage, and maybe taking down some of the chain link fence. I'm thinking, I've had a couple of comments from people who frequent that area that the signage that indicates that there's parking there is not really adequate, that we probably need a bigger, better sign, and I don't know what that would cost. And also that maybe if some of that chain link fence was removed, the Saturday morning car people could move themselves that way and alleviate, you know, some parking in that other Front Street parking lot. I mean, these are things that would not cost a lot, but could at least be an interim improvement in the situation.
Yes, the what I like to call the parking sign out there. That's the sign that meets the requirement, the size requirements, and the MUTCD. It designates that as a parking lot. That's not to say that we couldn't supplement that with as many signs as you could, but that would be something that we should take a more detailed look at. You know, maybe some wall remodeling there, because I think there's some advantage of having a low wall, and I believe our code requires that for screening of public parking lots. But that high wall has a couple of disadvantages. It makes it's an attractive place to go hide out at. You can do things back there that maybe you don't want people seeing you do. So if our police chief was here, I think she would appreciate if we had, you know, visibility into that area, especially encouraging more people to park in there.
So you're talking 6,500 maybe to reduce the size to like 3 feet or 4 feet,
something like that. Yeah.
And then do you have any cost estimate to removing the fencing? That chain link fence?
I didn't do that in this cost estimate, but it'd be somewhere probably around, probably around $5 to $10 a foot. So somewhere in the neighborhood of $200 to $3,500 to remove that fence.
And just two more quick questions: do you have any larger projects coming up that the fence reduction could be part of?
Not that is related to, we have some paving work that's going to be going on.
Knocking things down.
No. In a few years we'll have a wastewater treatment plant, but.
Not too soon.
Yeah.
Okay. The last question I think is, or more of a comment and a question. Quite often I see fishermen drying their nets out there in front of where that chain link is now. If in fact that were opened up more for parking, you know, to go from the Front Street parking lot over into there, make it more open, would that affect the fishermen who use that area, or could they possibly move to the back of the parking lot, or how? Maybe
I think I'll
Mr.
defer to the fisherman expert behind me.
He's our fishing expert. So.
Yeah, good evening. And typically those nets are stretched out for repair and working on them. They need to, you know, they get tangled and knotted up. They need just a big space, big flat open space to reel them out. So I think about any open space would work. It doesn't necessarily have to be right there.
It wouldn't interrupt their lives by kind of opening that end of it up a bit.
I think it would just move their lives doing that a little further elsewhere.
Thank you.
We'll find a place for them.
Okay.
Noah?
Okay. Still on questions. So I don't really have any other than recognizing that we still don't quite, we've identified the need for a boat haul out and boat yard, but we still don't have any specific plan for that. We're in the process of developing, hopefully, further what that could become. Just want to confirm that.
We had a concept plan that was prepared that was the Coastal Commission, I don't believe, appreciated it as much as we did. So,
I guess the question is, yes, we have a concept plan that was approved, I believe, by Harbor and by City Council just as a concept. But at that time, also, we didn't have access to this property, so it wasn't even considered as a boat haul out. It might be something that plan needs to be relooked at. Coastal Commission didn't appreciate that plan because some of that they believe is ESHA, as we believe it's just degraded habitat over there. So there is that issue that would have to be resolved with Coastal Commission where it's currently located. But again, yeah, we didn't even, through the whole process, this property wasn't even discussed because we didn't have it at that time. As far as the parking management plan boundaries is concerned, according to our zoning code, the rock parking lot is included in parking in lieu funds can be used, but this property is not. And that makes sense because we wouldn't have put this parking lot in the zone because we didn't have it. That doesn't mean we couldn't change it and include it now, because it certainly, that's our primary purpose of it right now. But for the time being, if we were to move forward with using those funds, it couldn't be used for this parking lot until we change that boundary.
And that change could, if we would like, occur as part of the interim use permit process?
Yeah, I think it'd be a real simple amendment.
Okay. Those are my questions. Thanks.
Okay, I have a few more for you, Mr. Livick, and that would be, so based on the staff report, it says we have approximately, and then as far as question goes, those are all the questions I have, and just procedurally, I'll exercise the procedures, but since there's no one in the audience, I don't need to open it up for public comment and bring it back to council for discussion. So I'm going to exercise the procedures there, and I'll go into discussion items. And part of that was we had some things laid out as far as what we do in the future, whether or not it's amending it, so on and so forth, or immediate use. And I just have a list of things that come to mind, and then for discussion for the rest of council as well. And one is to rezone the area, right? Either rezone the area or amend the area for an interim use. But we would have to rezone the area if it was going to be a permanent parking facility.
Yes, so the existing zoning is M2, which is heavy industrial.
Right.
There's a PD overlay on there, so it requires additional review. And then there's the interim overlay that allows for recreational and visitor-serving commercial. And in the list of uses, parking is one of those allowed uses. But it also says in that interim use that no permanent improvements are to be used when you have an interim use. And paving maybe is a permanent improvement. Definitely the drainage facilities, curbs and gutters, the concrete would be the permanent use. And I would venture to say that we make our pavement last a very long time in Morro Bay, so it's a pretty permanent improvement there. So for the interim use permit, if that's the direction that we're going with this, I would recommend the very minimal amount of improvements to that site.
So some of the suggestions I wrote down for the immediate use would be, can we enhance the driveway entrance? And I think you've laid that out in your sketch. I guess the question in addition to that is minimal investment, I understand, but are we, when I look at that, and you've got the engineer hat on, but the alignment of that driveway with the driveway across the parking lot, and would we consider making sure those two driveways are across from each other and put side crosswalks in that area, because it, you know, that is ultimately what it would be you know, used for. So I guess I have a question there on aligning the two driveways as far as minimal investment. And then the other one, install a monument parking sign, something other than the parking sign that's there, the P-arcing sign, something other than that. And then as far as laying out a parking grid, I don't know, would something like that on the gravel, or is it just kind of a free-for-all? What would you suggest for kind of the gravel intermediate? It's just, that's just something I'm throwing out there.
I think it's for large events. If we knew that we're going to be like, we would stripe it like
yeah,
we do the rock.
But that doesn't last. Yeah.
Yeah. It would last for the event.
Okay.
I think for everyday parking,
just kind of free form.
Free form parking, okay. Self selection.
And then the other item I have is designate a lay down area or not. I mean, would we consider a lay down area in there for other uses, or would we prohibit any kind of lay down or storage area? And those are the list of items I have for immediate use. And then I guess for so going from this all for discussion with my colleagues, and going forward, would we, I think for consideration of a plan that would include all the waterfront parking, we would need to consider the Maritime Museum. You are, and I put down alignment for the bike path, which is something that you identified as well, and then just alignment of driveways and a crosswalk. And probably for immediate use, we might want to consider a crosswalk at that point as well in that section. And then just future bluff development parking. So I guess the thought on that is that the other bluff area there that's undeveloped, this would be a parking area. So parking in lieu funds would go towards that parking area. Is that correct?
I don't believe that bluff area is in the parking.
I mean, if
it could be modified and added
yeah.
to that.
I mean, I think we're looking at the bluff area as far as being able to provide development there, and I think one of the limitations is parking.
Are you talking about the bluff area?
The bluff area that's out on the Front Street parking lot,
next to Frankie and Lola's.
Yeah.
Oh,
yes.
That is with an interim use permit, so it's something we would process through our planning commission and permit that as an interim use. And through that process, we could set up trigger points where we would want to either bring it back to them for renewal or bring it back to council for decision.
Okay. So I'm comfortable with that. I feel like moving forward seems there are a lot of other question marks there, so I'd like to move forward in a more organized way about that. The other thing is I would like to, and I know we've talked about this before, I'd like to ensure that the event planning team that the city has with the department heads that work with event planners, if we could start to formalize the use of that lot for the parking, the big events, and, for example, ensure that if there are going to be a lot of people parking, that the volunteers for the event have someone staged to direct people into that parking lot physically on the street, bringing them down beach or however they come down, but then pointing them into that area, or at least once, you know, maybe choosing that area first, or if certainly we saw a few months ago the Family Care Network, I believe it is, had the big event, and we had a bunch of events that day with the Kite Festival. If there's, you know, a walkie-talkie communication when the parking lot, the rock is full, if they start to then park people into this lot, I'd like to just formalize that event planners are starting to use this lot, because I think it would relieve a lot of congestion and disgruntled other individuals. And I know that nobody owns parking spaces, and I understand that, but I just think if we have it, we should utilize it, and maybe that would be a good way to get people familiar with it. So I'm not at this point interested in doing any more than the interim use.
Nancy?
Excuse me.
Want
to keep it up here?
Yeah, sorry.
I just want to be real short on this. Then that more water.
Sorry about that.
Kangen water. this parking lot, I think, could be an answer
through a lot of our problems in the future. We're a little premature here thinking that we're going to start doing something with this now. I do believe that maybe taking down the chain fence, make it a little more friendly for people to come in there, into that area. I think they're just a little shy. There's nothing wrong with that sign that says parking. I mean, everybody understands that sign. You're right. But it's almost like it's scary. Am I going to get behind that fence and then they're going to lock that gate? There's a lot of, you know, that's why I think people are scared to go in there. Then we did have a sign there that kept saying, you're parked this day, we're going to do this. It was very confusing, and so I physically just removed that thing. It was confusing people. But we just make it just a little more friendly, open it up. Like I said, it's premature. And right now, thank God that we do have a lot of parking in that area for the restaurants and things in that, and this has helped Burgess Landing over there tremendously. But it's a lot more parking lot that we need right now. But we got the problem down the street where we're talking about in this area. And like the city attorney told me one time, he says, you don't really need your parking right in the down main area. You need to park outward. And maybe we could have transportation coming here, going up and down there, maybe free transportation. And there's a lot of things going to be. I think the future of this thing is going to be really something we're going to look at, and I think we need to study this. We surely do need to spend a lot of money on this at this time. Just kind of make it look. I think the chain fence, make it just look like that you're not going to get trapped in there and you're not going to get your car out, you know. I think the sign even says no overnight parking. Oh, no overnight parking, you know. So it's kind of scary, and I think that's why people are not using this lot. They think you're going to lose their car. So right now, make it a little more friendly to get in there. Kind of leave it set. I think if we just let it set for a while, we're going to come up a day. We're going to really be glad we bought this lot.
Nancy?
I agree pretty much with all that's been said. I think we definitely need to move forward. I don't think we need to study it any further. I think we need to have our public services department do what needs to be done. We've had a lot of recommendations here, from taking down the fence to aligning the driveway, but do what needs to be done, as George says, to make this more friendly so that people can use it. And I think I heard him say there was plenty of parking down that way. Having spent the last almost 4 weeks up and down there, there's not much parking in that lot. I drove round and round the other day trying to find one place just to go to
up there, the bike path, the Maritime Museum. So I'm in complete agreement with minimal spending at this point, and it makes sense to do the interim use permit and do an update to the parking and lieu map as amendment to that, just so we're set in case we want to go there. And I think making it more friendly and inviting is an important step to encourage that, and that would include better signage, the modest parking flow, and aesthetic improvements. I really think if we can do whatever we can to recognize it through public transit, you know, have it on the maps as public transit, you know, the maps that we have available for public transit in the trolley. And it'd be interesting to reach out to the restaurants in that area and encourage employee parking over there, see what we can do to get the employees to kind of help lead the way and establish some sense of that as a parking area for all as soon as possible. What do you think, Mr. Lee?
Well, again, we're trying to encourage that, but again, it looks a little scary over there.
Yeah.
And employees have to go over there at night. So.
Yeah, absolutely. To see what we can do to help with that.
Yeah.
The crosswalk concept was a good one, and then I did like the idea of getting the event planners and review team on board with starting to have a blueprint of how a larger event could lay out the most efficient way, so we can help them, so they don't have to, each one's kind of redesigning from the beginning. So that's my comments.
Okay. So as far as this go, there's just moving forward with the suggested direction. We don't need a motion on this other than we're not...
I think the motion would be as simple as just directing staff to process an interim permit for
and modify the parking district to include this area?
Correct.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
I'd second that.
And second. A second. So we have a motion by Nancy and a second by Christine. Any discussion?
A quick discussion point would be do we want some form of a report back regarding expenditures or a cap on the budget, an estimate of what we could see?
Yeah, that's a good suggestion, just to see exactly as far as an interim scope.
How about after we pursue the interim use permit, we report back to council as to what improvements we propose on making, and we could have probably a couple of options for that.
Yeah. That would be good.
Good idea.
And that would come through the Planning Commission as well?
Well, first for the Planning Commission and then to City Council.
Great. That sounds
Thanks.
Good.
Perfect. So with that addition to the motion, do we have another second on that? Okay.
Yes.
So we have the motion and
we're
the
ready.
Second?
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. And hopefully we'll get done in this, but just in case, do I have a... your motion to continue past 11 o'clock if we don't make it by 11?
Let's make it by 11. Come on, this is easy. All we have to do is move approval.
Do I have a motion to make it past 11?
No.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Let's get it done.
Okay,
yeah, just in case.
A motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Opposed? No. Okay, motion carries 3-2. We're going to go on to D2. Okay, we're on D2. Review of proposed memorandum of understanding with Morro Bay Bike Park Organization for the design and permitting of a bike park in Morro Bay. Mr. Woods.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'll start now. Thank you.
There you go.
The development of the bike park was reintroduced by the public to City Council earlier this year. We have been on the fast track. You supported this concept of the city working with this local interest group in a resolution that you passed, 20.20-13, and you directed us to work with this local group to get and establish a bike park in the city of Morro Bay on city property. And we have been talking with the Morro Bay Bike Group, which is in your staff report called Morro Bay Bike Park, MBP. And they have, since we've talked, hooked up with CCCMB, which is the Central Coast Concerned Mountain Bikers. And they entered into an MOU. We attached that for your review. We've also... gone to this draft has gone to the Recreation Parks Commission. They reviewed it. Their comments were that they support the location and the obligations that were presented in the MOU, and they're recommending your approval.
Quick question for the city attorney. I just thought about this just now because there's an MOU with 3CMB, Central Coast Concerned Mountain Bikers, which I'm a member. So, you know, I don't think that has anything to do, but I just thought I would disclose and discuss. So now that that's out in the air. Okay, thanks. And the only other, as far as the MOU goes, the only question I have for the colleagues, my colleagues on council is just permission for the mayor to have permission to write letters on the city's behalf to help move this project forward, or for additional help for our sponsors that might be. So if something comes up and there'd be a letter of support from the city that on the city letterhead, we can go ahead and craft that. So basically, you know, real briefly, I would like to include something like that tonight.
That's really already allowed under our policies and procedures, as long as that's a direction that's council's already taken, which is supporting this, and you can craft those letters in support of that and send
just
them out.
Formally through.
You can do that on anything.
Tonight, yeah, I just wanted to do that. And if there's consensus with that or agreement to that, that's all the only comments I have.
I move approval of D2.
Do we have a second? And we have a second. So we have a motion by Nancy, a second by George. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries 5-0. And as far as approval of writing letters, I'm looking at consensus on that from folks, so that looks good.
And then as Rocky Balboa would say, go for it.
Okay.
We got
all
2 minutes.
All right, we're good to go. And so with that, now we are down to declaration of future agenda items. And I think we have two that might come up. One is the intersection of Marina and Fresno. I don't know if that's going to be brought up. And the other one is the resolution for the parking and lieu fee from $15,000 to $2,000. I think that expired in July. Yeah, there's a resolution that I brought up earlier in the year that basically says our parking and lieu funds for the downtown area from $15,000 to $2,000, that resolution expired. So I'd like to bring that back for council to revisit that and discuss that. Looking for support.
Okay.
Yes, got support
yes.
on that. Good. So any other future
Square.
Agenda items?
Yes, I got one.
I have one.
Okay.
George?
I would like to see if we could form a subcommittee to, I don't know, talk to the Hartzels or something on that order about that lot that's sitting vacant down there on the Embarcadero that is actually a super eyesore, and it could be used for parking as we've been talking about parking. And so I suggest that we form.
I would support you on that and would be interested in being on the subcommittee.
Good enough.
Anybody else support on that?
Yes.
We have support on that. So we need to bring that back for discussion. Okay. So there's two agenda items, and then I think we have one more for the...
I might have two. The first one was just to, I guess, Mr. Livick's input on the intersection at Marina and Fresno. That is perhaps the best thing to do there is to make this an agenda item. Would it be perhaps best to send something like this to PWAB?
I think in the past, traffic signs went to PWAB before they went to City Council. It's not a hard and fast requirement, but if Council did want to get other public input, that would be the way to go to see. And then we had an agenda item that on PWAB that it's kind of related to this, about creating a public process for that petition of stop signs.
That would be good to roll into.
Yeah, that we could roll into that.
So I don't think we don't really need to agendize that. It's more like direction.
Yes.
Is that okay to give that direction, or no, we can't do that now because it's not really, we didn't really.
I think the direction was just to put this on the future agenda and send it to PWEB first is what I'm hearing the consensus mm-hmm. of.
Yes,
it.
The policy we'll perhaps for the petition for stop sign for traffic signs that. Would that be the item?
In addition to a specific
one. And this specific one, though. You want?
Well, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I think it's yes. for the specific intersection and policy that policy for the structure as far as.
Citizen requests.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you remind us, is the next PWAB meeting, when is that scheduled? We talked about a joint meeting, but.
There's a joint meeting scheduled. It was bumped by the water reclamation facility coming, so it's scheduled for the last Thursday.
2810. Are we all good on that?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you all for staying with us. Meeting adjourned.
When you win, everybody loses, though, because it's always late.